Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Queer Quadrant, a podcast where we, two bisexual filmmakers, examine cinema in all its cultural contexts and explore why your favorite four quadrant blockbusters are maybe not as straight as you think they are.
Good job. Huh? Very good job.
And now, everybody, Brooke Solomon for the rest of the episode.
Thanks. I hope you enjoy your nap, Jordan.
Yes.
Have a good night.
This was nice. Pleasure to see you on this lovely Sunday.
Thank you.
Will never see you again.
We very, very intelligently decided to let Jordan do the intro for this
episode. How many people do you think turned off immediately?
They were like, ew, who's this? Like,
fuck,
who's this?
I'm not used to this.
Do we usually listen to him? I don't know.
Oh, they usually skip every time they hear me. They're like, +15, +15, till they hear you and they scrub back like a smidge.
They're missing out on a lot of good content bad jokes.
And a lot of bad jokes, yes. No, you know what? I'll make no jokes today because I won't be talking the whole
episode.
We're
not going to have time. We have so much to get through.
Too much.
Because, okay.
Why do we have so much to get through?
Hi.
Hello.
I'm Brooke Solomon.
Wait, can we take that from the top? Because hi, I'm Jordan Gustafson.
I'm Brooke Solomon.
Nice.
We love talking about movies.
We love talking about cinema. We love talking about queer cinema. And today, no.
You were so close.
Fuck.
Okay. Can you do it? We love
movies.
We love talking about
cinema. We love talking about cinema. We love talking about
being queer.
Being queer. We like talking about queer cinema. And today, we're talking about 2010's Black Swan.
Good job. Wow. I'll let you do all like the role at the end.
The stress
too.
Of being in the driver's seat. I'm like, I can't push us off the highway otherwise.
I know.
Because I'm driving.
You can do the
rate
review.
I can distract
follow.
You. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I know. I how's it feel to be in the hot seat?
I don't like it.
Yeah.
Who wants to be a millionaire? Not me.
Okay. Well, today we're talking about Black Swan.
Yes.
The 2010 masterpiece.
A great movie.
And not only is it obviously one of the best movies ever committed to celluloid, but...
Literal celluloid, yes.
Yeah, I know. Sean Film. Natty Liberty. He knows what's up. Mwah.
Yes. Director, or sorry, cinematographer of Venom.
Cinematographer of Birds of Prey.
Yes.
He does some wild movies. We'll talk about it.
We love him, yes.
Today, we're talking about Black Swan.
Yes.
And it's also our 1 year anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Happy
to us.
Anniversary. We
to
have
you.
To you too.
Wow. It's been a year.
It's been a year. We've made a child.
Literally.
That is this podcast.
Wow. It's grown so much.
Yeah.
It's wild. It does feel weird. I don't know. I think it's quaint and cute that we've made it a year. I'm shocked.
It's one. Quaint.
No, it's inspiring.
Yeah.
It's jaw dropping. I would say that we committed our whole selves to the art. Form of podcasting. You know, we saw our double and we killed it. But I mean, just like, because, you know, however many years before we started it, we were like, oh my God, it would be so funny if we did a podcast.
We literally talked about, I know this is like the most hilarious thing ever, because I'm pretty sure any two friends that have ever existed are like,
yes,
we should start a podcast.
You know what? Like, we like have similar ideas. We should talk about
it
on mic.
We love talking to each other and we think that everyone deserves to hear our voices.
Yes. Our conversations are the most important.
We're so interesting.
Absolutely.
We're just, people are missing out on so much if they don't listen to us
talk
to each other. But yeah, for years we were like, oh, we should do a podcast. Like, we love film podcasts so much. We just never could figure out what it was about.
What the end was,
yeah,
yes.
Yeah, but then during quarantine, should we? Yeah, I'll talk about it.
Yeah, we could talk about it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like May May 2020.
Wow.
And
we were so young.
We were like, we have all this extra time right now. We should finally start podcast.
Yeah.
And I remember we had like a 2-hour phone call. I was sitting on my bed and we were just like brainstorming different things that the podcast should be about. And we were like, all we do is talk about
dumb gay movies.
Cinema.
Yeah. When we're like, hey, we watch a movie and we both text each other like, hey, this is gay.
Kind of gay.
Yes.
And voila,
and here we are,
the podcast
doing the same
was born.
Thing. You're basically, this is just a transcription of our text.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
So
welcome to our lives,
yeah,
listeners.
I hope
and
you,
happy 1 year.
Hope you enjoy it. No, seriously, thank you very much.
True.
To
truly,
everyone
we wouldn't
that
be
listens.
Here without you.
Very important. And it's been so great. And we're gonna do some great stuff in the future. Okay, we're gonna reconvene at the end of the
yes.
episode for more
for more podcast
anniversary
stuff,
talk. Yes.
Because I think it's important that we get to this movie.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, we don't have any time to waste.
No.
We got to talk about this movie.
Zero.
Black Swan.
Good movie. What a shock.
Good fucking movie. I mean, famously, or not famously if you don't know me, but famously my favorite movie of all time.
Yes.
Number one.
With a bullet.
Nothing will ever surpass it, I don't think.
That's impressive, actually.
Yeah.
Not even MMFR.
Mad Max Fury Road. That's number two. Mm. Like, it's very close.
Then what's three?
The Nice Guys. And then number four is Thelma and Louise.
Hot.
So
it's a great four.
I can just keep going.
That's a great four.
I have a whole top 30 ranked list on my Letterboxd at Brooke B. Solomon. So you can go check that out.
See, I have mine, and I will occasionally like go back and look at it, and I'll be like, I need to update this, and then go, no.
I did update it recently, but it's always like the bottom eight or so that like shuffle around, or I like get rid of one movie and like put in a new one.
My rankings go all, I'm constantly flummoxing.
Well, yeah, you flummoxing?
Changing.
Flip-flopping. Mm-hmm. Well, you change your top four on Letterboxd too. My top four like literally haven't changed in years.
Yeah. I have, yeah, no, I do change. Wow. What am I?
I know. Well, I'm just...
What is the bisexual experience except being indecisive?
I can't relate, but...
Maybe
that's good for you.
What is the Gustafson experience without being indecisive?
I'm like the most decisive person ever.
Yes, yes. So this is just me.
I very rarely question my decisions. But that doesn't mean that I always make right decisions, but I rarely question
it.
Them.
You stick to the dance, one may say.
I do. But yes, should we talk about...
I think we should talk about how we met this movie.
Yeah, how...
How did you meet this movie?
I met Black Swan.
How did you meet Natalie?
We both have good...
We have good stories. Yes.
So the first time that I watched this movie, I was 17,
hot,
I guess.
Great.
And
How many years ago was that? What year were you in high school or college?
I was in high school.
Okay.
And I was, it's not, I think it was like the summer before senior year.
Mm.
So I was like deep in high school.
Very fun.
And I had just had my wisdom teeth out. I watched this movie in bed, high on painkillers.
Iconic.
With my mouth wrapped in gauze. And it was like 8 a.m. because I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
Because I was in so much pain. And it was the most transcendent experience.
You were
I've
like,
ever
this
had.
Psychosexual ballet is how I feel right now.
Well, I was like, high.
Yeah. Yeah. No,
like
on drugs.
Medically.
Yes. Yes.
And I was just like,
what made you
decide
away. To watch this?
There was
like a whole wealth of other movies that feel more fit for wisdom teeth removal.
Well, isn't this so me that I was like, well, I want to watch like the most engrossing movies I can think of and not like comfort movies. When I had the flu last year, I watched Prisoners, Shutter Island, and The
duly
Departed.
Appointed federal marshal.
The Departed, I think. I was like, let me find like long, complicated movies.
I love that. I love that.
To keep me engaged.
I mean, I think that is a thing. Like, I definitely, when I was sick, would try to watch longer movies. So that way you're sort of like, you can like waste the day
exactly.
more. You feel like, yeah. Or like get into a TV show. Like when I had my wisdom teeth out, I watched all of American Horror Story Season 4 Carnival. Or whatever the carnival one was. Freak show. Yeah.
That's not even a good season.
Yeah, that's fine.
But yeah, I don't know. I also think I had a Harry Potter marathon when I had my wisdom teeth out. But I had four impacted wisdom teeth,
that's
which is like
so
the worst you can have. I was in bed for like 4 days.
What? So did you remember this movie after?
Oh, I remembered it perfectly.
Did you like watch it soon thereafter, or did you wait, or how many times have you seen this? That's so funny
because like I don't remember. I Letterboxd, I've only logged it like twice, which is so wrong. I've watched it like six
times
because
like when you got Letterboxd, of course. Yes.
No, but it's the like I watch it frequently.
That's so funny. But you just like forget to log it just because you're like, oh, I just always have this on.
Yeah. I don't know,
it's your Bible.
It's my comfort movie, I guess. It's not a very chill movie, but I put it on and I'm like, yeah.
Can I reference a former guest of ours Letterboxd review that I really love?
Yes.
Fran, former and future guests of the show will say at some point. Her review is, I was so stressed while watching this that M&Ms melted in my hands and I thought that they were blood. And I was like, that's how I feel watching this. And then you're like, yeah, this is my comfort movie. And I'm like, huh?
Yeah, no, I know.
What stress are you feeling?
It's a very stressful movie. But I don't know what to tell you. I just think it's like a culmination of everything that I like about cinema, but I'm going to get to that a little later. I do remember this was like one of the first DVDs that I like bought myself because I wasn't a physical media person until recently. So
that is always a very important thing, is like buying your first like Blu-ray or DVD or Steelbook, whatever, for yourself.
It's just a DVD. I saw it at like Target and I was like,
it was in the bargain bucket.
I need it.
Reached in.
Yeah.
A hand leapt out, grabbed you, pulled you in.
Yeah, for sure. Okay. Why don't you tell me about when you first saw this movie?
Yes. So I think I've told this on mic in form or whatever, but it's my favorite movie going story of all time.
Uh-huh.
The year's 2010. I am 11 years old. My sister is 8 years old.
You were not 11.
10?
2010.
I was 10 then.
You would have been 14.
Yes.
Yes.
Shit. Okay. So yeah. I'm 14?
You're 14.
So I'm 14. Fuck. Cool. I'm 14 and I am obviously starting to get into movies. You know what I mean? Loving the cinema. My finger's on the pulse. I'm like, this is like the year I'm sort of starting to get into watching all the Oscar movies. Like this is, I feel like this year and the previous year before is when I'm really like throwing myself fully into being like a quote unquote cinephile. And so I convinced my parents to take me and my sister to the local Nickelodeon. It's literally called the Nickelodeon Theater at the time.
Dang.
It is now closed. It was the only indie rep theater on the Cape in my local area that wasn't like an hour drive away.
Mm-hmm.
The only place that was showing Black Swan, and I convinced them to take me and my then 11-year-old sister to go see this movie. And we walk in where my parents are like, oh my God, it's going to be like a movie version of Swan Lake. Like how exciting. Like
oh,
we love Swan Lake. My sister did ballet at the time. It's going to be fantastic. We go in, it starts out, you know, pretty fine. But then I don't know, Brooke, if you've seen this movie, but as it starts to go, it gets a little sexual.
Do you
remember? It gets a little scary.
What like the defining moment was when your parents were like, oh no, absolutely not.
It's probably
when she rips off her nail.
I was going to say, I think the nail or like when stuff starts happening with Mila is like definitely
right.
Like where obviously it goes down. But or honestly, maybe it's when Winona goes like cock. When she has like
right.
that line reading and my parents are like, oh shit, like
gotta get out of here.
Sexual. And so what they start doing is they start taking turns bringing my sister out of the theater. So that way she doesn't see any of like the bad stuff going on while I'm sitting there and watching the movie. And they like, well, like we like alternates, like bringing in, bringing out. And eventually they both are just like, you know what? Fuck this. And just like wait the movie out because it just becomes too chaotic.
Too intense.
Yes.
So you watched it alone.
Of course. Yeah. Well, one parent, I assume, stated.
Were you scared?
I was a little traumatized, but I was also annoyed because I had seen movies like this before. So I was just like, let me finish the movie.
I got it.
Like,
oh.
I know what's going on.
I would have been so irked to be like interrupted from the movie going experience.
Of course, yeah.
Like to be distracted. I've never seen this movie in a theater and I'm really sad that I didn't. Yeah.
I was just like, whoa. And this was also like, you know, when you're 14, you're on the cusp of like sexuality and
all
that
stuff. Well, I was gonna say.
So I was like, what the fuck is going on here?
This was definitely a very definitive movie for me in that realm of things.
Was an awakening movie per se,
but also like not just, maybe I shouldn't admit this on mic, it's too late now, not just like in terms of like, oh my God, like
women,
but also like sex. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Where I was like, whoa,
you're like, sex can be
like, it's
bad?
Hot.
Yeah.
I mean it's fucked,
it's hot
up.
But it's also with yourself.
But also I was like, I guess like it's probably not a healthy scene. I mean,
oh,
the scene
I got the scene. I already know the scene.
Nina in the dance studio. Yeah, where I was like,
it's,
wait, this is
when
like
Nina starts to
hot.
Masturbate and her mom's in the room. That's when everything started to go downhill.
I mean, that might be the most traumatic scene in the movie. I'm not gonna
yes.
lie to you.
Yes.
Like nothing is worse than
the
that
scariest scene.
So
they talk
upsetting.
About like horror movie scenes and how scary they get, like ranking and whatever. Like that should be on the list.
Yeah,
is that not a deep fear of any human.
Oh, anyone. But no, my original point that scene between Thomas and Nina in the dance studio, which is like very sexy, but obviously like very messed up. I was like, whoa.
He's like seducing her.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great movie. Love it. Okay. Great. So.
Yeah.
Should we just start talking about it?
Let's talk about it. Okay, great. Do you want to go through pre-pro or do you want to just like talk about the plot or what are you feeling?
Let's talk about pre-pro.
So Aronofsky. Darren D. Dot Aronofsky.
Let's talk about...
What's your relationship with him? I feel like if this is your favorite movie of all time, like what is your dynamic with him? Like, do you like a lot of his work? Do you not?
I am actually pretty mixed on him.
How did you feel about Mother exclamation point?
I don't like Mother exclamation point. And I don't like it, but I don't like it for specific reasons. You're gonna laugh at me. I don't like it because I think it's like just a terrible like biblical allegory. But that's also why I hated Noah is that it's like not, it's so obvious. It was no good. Let me tell you.
Oh, there you go. Nice.
Talk about theater going experiences. I went to see Noah with my family under the same.
No, you didn't.
Pretense. I mean, that's not like that sexy of a movie. Like, it's definitely like a blockbuster.
I know. But, I just love. I love the idea of the Solomon clan rolling up to the local Regal cinemas to see Noah.
Yeah. The local cinema's an hour away, and let me tell you, like half the audience walked out
of Noah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because everyone thought it was like a biblical epic.
Can
guess
I say
what
something?
It's not.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, it's not good. Well, like yeah, it's not why. Even some people like it. I don't think it's good.
I sort of like Mother.
I
really like the last act because it's just how unhinged it is, and I like Michelle Pfeiffer in it.
I can't do it.
Who are the brothers in that movie? I already
it's
forget.
It's Domhnall Gleeson.
Right.
And I don't remember who the other guy is. I feel like he is maybe not someone super known.
It is Brian Gleeson.
Oh, shit. So it's just the two of them.
Yep. They're brothers, literally.
They're actual brothers. Well, I don't know. I feel like Mother has like too much going on. I think it needs to pick a lane. Obviously think the unhinged stuff at the end is cool, but like... The biblical allegory of it really annoys me too, because like he thinks that it's so smart and it's not.
It's kind of, I think the thing is, I think he masters it with Black Swan.
Yes.
In which that a lot of people, I think, walked out of this movie being like, what the fuck is this? Or a lot of people were like, I don't get this movie. I think this movie wears its plot and everything on its sleeve from the beginning. You know you're in Nina's head, and you know what's going on. You know she's going crazy.
Yeah,
there's no twists or surprises what this movie is. This movie's very upfront, and people who are like, I don't get it, I'm like, were you watching the movie?
Like, what did you expect?
Right.
I love maximalist cinema, yes. And I feel like
absolutely no subtlety.
Yeah,
it's all sledgehammer,
but like I'm obsessed with it if you can do it well, like if
totally.
It works. That's why I like Verhoeven so much.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
I love being
you
like,
love the crazy man who
yes
puts everything forward.
Yeah,
he's like, do you know what I'm talking about?
Can you believe Darren Aronofsky is just kind of like an American guy?
No. Can you believe how much money he's invested in the scarf industry?
Yeah.
Like, is he single-handedly keeping it afloat?
He is.
Like, him and his scarves?
Mm-hmm. But I think that maximalist filmmaking is very, very good if it's done well. And, like, you have to have someone to keep you in check if you're a maximalist filmmaker. And I think that, like, Black Swan, obviously, he conceived of the idea for the script, but he didn't write it. And Mother, like, he wrote and directed. Noah, he wrote and directed. I mean, The Fountain, he wrote and directed. And those movies are all just, like, a little too much.
Yeah.
Like, it's too off the rails. There's not, like, the elegance that Black Swan has. He did write Requiem for a Dream, I will say, which I like a lot. But, yeah, I'm sort of mixed on him. I'm not immediately like, oh, my God, I have to go
Mr.
see
Aronofsky,
whatever the new Aronofsky thing is.
I am excited for – I'm cautiously optimistic for The Whale.
I don't know.
The Brendan Gleeson vehicle – or Brendan Fraser.
Brendan Fraser.
I'm interested to see what it is. But
yes.
For me – I don't know. I feel like I have an interesting relationship with him because I watched Requiem for a Dream, and that movie had a clench on me far too long where I was like really obsessed with it.
It's a good movie.
It's a good movie, but like I think I was viewing it too much. Like I like had it sort of too high in my like what I was trying to do. It's like sort of that period, I think, when you're going from high school into college and you're like trying to figure out what your style and your voice is and you don't know it yet. And so you rely on other people's work to like help inform what your voice is going to be without you then having the time to discover what your voice is.
Yeah.
And that was sort of swirling around at the time. But now that I've grown apart from it and actually like know what my voice is, I've sort of like pushed away from it. But I really did, like, especially at the time, I'm like, it's a very good movie.
It's very
and
good.
The shenanigans that they're going on with the opioids and everything in that movie is fucked up. I do like Pi. I think Pi is fun.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that you were saying is, like, I think with the wrestler in this movie, it's a really fascinating sort of 1-2 punch because they really do feel so much like companion pieces where the wrestler is sort of the masculine like version of it and the Black Swan sort of has the feminine version of it,
right?
And having watched The Wrestler recently this year and Black Swan now twice this year, I've like had a really close 1-2 of those two movies watching them within the same month. It really like kind of opened my eye to be like how it's sort of tackling the same themes. And while I really did like The Wrestler, he sort of uses that I think to then even hone in more for Black Swan, because Black Swan really does feel like everything that he wanted to get in The Wrestler, but better.
Right, right. I think that he is a filmmaker that needs to be restrained a little bit. And Black Swan is like the only movie from his filmography. It's the movie that he's been like the least involved with.
Yeah.
Like he is basically just the director and obviously like so much of it is his creative vision. But like it is a studio piece, which is interesting because it like is an indie film, but has like studio backing, but
yeah.
like is an indie.
Yeah.
And was made for no money.
Right, exactly. Like, if it doesn't have Natalie, then it's not getting the release that this movie had.
Exactly. And also, this movie was really weirdly released, but we'll get to it. But it doesn't matter because it made, like, a fuck ton. This movie made so much money.
I mean, I was so on the pulse about this movie, and I was, like, as I was saying, like, I'm 14. Like,
yeah.
I shouldn't have been so hyper aware of it. Well, I mean, maybe I should because I was, like, trying to be a cinephile. But, like, the fact that, like, I was, like, convincing my parents and my parents knew about it, like, the reach that it had. And I think that it is because The Wrestler was so successful and you have Mickey Rourke's Oscar campaign and everything. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Without that, I don't think you get Black Swan and you get sort of the release and the mm-hmm. the attention that it gets.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a really good sort of like indie studio success story.
Yeah.
So it's, and I mean, it was distributed by Fox Searchlight, but it's not a Fox Searchlight production. Like it was an indie film, like production company wise, but it had, like you said, it had sort of like some star
power. The bigger
power
release,
behind it. It rocks. But yeah, basically the conclusion about Darren Aronofsky is that I don't love him. I think that he is a good director, obviously, but you know.
Yeah. Like sort of hit and miss with you. Yeah. I think that his style works the best here. For sure, because like having the roving camera, having like the ability to like be, because I think like his style, I guess that's why I like this part of Mother towards the end, is that like I feel like with all of his filming is so much about like anxiety,
right?
And like how can you like stress the viewer out? And I feel like he really is able to do that, especially with this movie, like using and weaponizing the Super 16 and using sort of like the handheld and like everything going on where you really sort of feel uncomfortable, and then using those sly sort of camera tricks with the mirrors and doubling where everything then sort of builds this feeling. So it channels sort of the anxiety and sort of the hypermania that earlier movies like Pi and stuff
and
like are starting
to touch
on.
Exactly. Obviously with like those amazing like short shot sequences. Right. I think that Black Swan is incredibly effective in being anxiety inducing. Of course, me being a crazy person, after I watched it the first time, I was like, well, now I want to find every mirror shot, every time that it's like a little bit off, the club scene, I want to like pause it on every frame and look at what's going on.
Every frame of painting.
Right. But like all together, it's like very overwhelming and very disorienting. But there's so many like micro shots in this that are just like a little
where you
bit
see,
off.
Yes, yes.
There's so many times where Natalie Portman is passing a mirror where her reflection is just a tiny bit out of sync with her.
Yes, yes.
Which is crazy. Like it's happened so early and so frequently, and I have no idea if it's like intentional or if it was just like,
oh, for sure, for
I
sure.
I mean of course it is, but I guess more appropriately if it's like camera tricks or if they decided to like go in afterward and be like, wouldn't it be
and
cool
it
if we
post,
just kind of like splice this a little differently. I don't know like how intentional it was, I guess, like from the outset. But it's so cool. It's very disorienting. I love it so much.
That's great.
Yeah. Can we talk about how this movie is shot?
Yes,
since we're
can.
On it. Okay. So this movie is shot by King Matty Leivetti.
Yes.
I love him.
Should have won for A Star is Born.
Yeah. I'm well, really that surprised
year,
that he didn't.
That year had what won? Wasn't it 1917?
No, because that is the next year.
I have it up here. Sorry. Okay. It was, oh, right. Roma won.
Oh.
I get it.
Wow. And
I think
like,
A Star is Born.
Yeah. I mean.
Can I hot take? I think A Star is Born shot better, but.
I mean, I think it's very different styles, yeah. So it depends on like the style.
Yeah, but I love Roma too.
More
yeah.
personally drawn to, where there's all that controversy with Roma, where it was like,
was he the
Cuarón
DP?
Didn't really yeah, shoot yeah, yeah. it, blah blah blah. Yeah, I obviously like Inception wins the year that Black Swan is up for best cinematography.
Do you disagree?
No, I don't disagree, but it's that sort of same thing where it's like the flashy stuff is always yeah. going to win. Like Roma is like this black and white thing. You know, Matty Leivetti is just like very good, and he's it's so weird because he shoots like a lot of cool indie stuff, but he shoots really
Josie and the Pussycats.
Big stuff too, like Josie and the Pussycats Birds of Prey.
Right, he can do, as we literally said, like in the same year he gets nom for A Star is Born, he gets nom for, or he does Venom.
Right.
So it's like,
right.
like the dichotomy of man, like he's really able to sort of do these really big, flashy, classic mainstream things and then able to work with the director to get like these small,
right.
more auteur driven vehicles.
He shot some pretty iconic stuff too, like Straight Out of Compton or like Chirac, Iron Man. Like he knows what the fuck
is
up.
The man is great, yeah.
He
an
also,
iconic director.
He shot
DP.
Iconic DP. He also shot a film that we have covered on the pod. Do you know what it is? Do you want me to tell you?
Sure.
You're never gonna guess it. He shot The Prom, which is a movie that looks pretty good, so if a little CG goopy, but it like it has like those colors that he's really good at. Jordan's just kind of like in
yeah,
shock.
No, yeah. I'm trying to draw the parallels. I can see it. Mm-hmm. I just think The Prom then just gets so Ryan Murphy-ized
yeah.
that you sort. But then again, I think that goes to say that he's able to fit with directors' visions that he want, like that they want.
He has the range. I mean, I yeah. love how Birds of Prey looks.
Oh, same.
Yeah.
Great movie.
Upcoming, he's shooting The Whale. He's like Aronofsky's go-to guy. Yeah. And he's shooting Don't Worry, Darling.
Did. Don't Worry, Darling.
Oh yeah, it's Raft. Over. It's done.
Yeah.
Can't wait for that movie.
Very
so
interested
excited.
To see how that looks.
I really hope it's good.
I hope so too.
I'm so nervous.
We like Olivia Wilde. So.
I love Olivia Wilde. We'll and like see. It's cool to see her doing like a Gone Girl style thriller, is from what I understand.
The pivot like, from comedy to that, I think will be interesting
to
see.
To like feminist
yeah.
thriller is
yeah.
awesome. Oh god. Oh.
We love. But the way this is
anyway.
Shot, yes.
Yes.
I mean, I agree. I think it's without him and Aronofsky sort of using the granular like up in your face, I don't think you get the same thing. Like if this was shot flashy, you wouldn't have the impact that it has. Like by using it and by I think being limited to the indie budget, I think you're able to then get a more intense version of like the story you want.
I'm very surprised that I like how this movie is shot, because I usually yeah. hate a shaky cam and b sort of like docu style. I really liked the locked down flashy stuff, and there are so many directors who I don't actually like, but I love how their stuff looks. Like Nicholas Winding Refn, I feel like is the best example. Like I don't like any of his movies, but like I love
you like
how
I like
look.
The vibes. Yeah,
actually that's kind of a lie, because I do like The Neon Demon, but I have very mixed feelings about that movie. But I kind of like it, but I have very mixed feelings.
Do you vroom vroom?
I don't like Drive. I don't like that movie.
She
I'm
says
sorry.
She slowly puts on a Drive coat.
The scorpion jacket.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm so sorry. I you have to revoke yeah. my film kid card. I actually can't stand
Taken
that movie.
Back. Wow.
Yeah.
But no, I agree. I mean, I think there's one shot in particular, and it's one of the last shots, is when she's falling down towards the mat and she's looking at the camera. Is so fucking beautiful.
It's gorgeous.
And all of the ballet stuff I think is really fascinating. The way they edit it too is when she'll like, I don't know the ballet move, but she'll do like a spin,
a pirouette.
She'll pirouette and then it'll
Thank
cut
you.
And like cut, and it cuts on the pirouette, so mm-hmm. you really get like this intense feel like she's almost done, but then you cut to the next one.
Yeah.
And it really like gives you like a sense of like tension and like anxiety, as like you get not closer, but you're like, you know, it's such an active choice to cut that you're hyper aware of it, but it works for the function of the movie.
Yeah, totally. This was also nominated for best editing, I do believe, which I won't say it deserved, because I think The Social Network one, which like totally understandable. Deserved. But yeah. This movie is very well edited. You want to know my hottest take.
I do.
In terms of awards and stuff like that, is that I think that this movie should have won Best Sound Editing.
Ooh, interesting.
Over Inception, mm-hmm. I believe. And of course, like, it's never going to beat Inception. But I don't even know if it was nominated. And, like, sound is such an important part of this movie. And, like, so much of it, and ties into the cinematography. The cinematography for a lot of it is, like, just Natalie Portman doing normal things. But the sound design is so unnerving. Yes. And, like, they put in feathers and, like, claws and, like, screeching.
The sound when her neck grows at the end.
Yeah.
Disturbing. Or when, like, when Mila Kunis is going down on her and you hear her like back movements with her tattoo.
Right.
Oh my God.
Or like Natalie Portman will pass dancers and there's like that like ruffling as mm-hmm. she passes them. That is all post and it is so essential. Wait.
They weren't birds.
Okay, fuck you. It's essential to, again, like the unnerving nature of this movie. One of the reasons that this movie is so good, of course, as with any good movie, is that it's all the elements working like very much in sync to make like a cohesive whole, but I feel like you're seeing that less and less. Maybe I'm just cynical, but so often it feels like, well, there's one standout from this thing or one standout from that thing, when like you really do need like an all-encompassing movie to just be so perfect. I was thinking about like how many recent like Academy Award acting winners are from movies that are just not culturally like relevant,
super great, or sort of dropped off.
Yeah, and it's like, I don't know. I just think, what's the point of getting like a really outstanding central performance for your movie if like you're not going to invest in all of the elements to really make it great?
Right.
It's just unfortunate. But sometimes you get masterpieces like where everything is working perfectly together.
I mean, talk about a movie in the cultural zeitgeist. I think this movie is constantly like elements of it will always be tweeted. How many times a day do you not see Natalie Portman staring in a mirror with horror written across it?
Yeah, I
mean,
love
that is cinema, baby.
So good. Yeah.
Like, literally the one of the video of her writing
horror,
it.
Heart, smiley
so
face.
Good.
There's not an audio commentary for this movie that I know of. Mm. Maybe I'll have to try and track down, like, I don't even know if there's a steelbook for it. I'll have to track down, like, the 4K Blu-ray remaster. Yeah. Or maybe there's something on there. But there is a feature-length documentary that talks about how they shot it. And, like, it's insane to just see Natalie Portman, Darren Aronofsky, and Maddie Leibetik like running around New York City being like, we don't have any money for this. Like, let's just see what happens. Like, they They shot all of this at a college over spring break.
Whoa.
Like, that's doubling for essentially like
a preeminent ballet studio.
Exactly. And like, that's where they shot all the stage stuff. And pretty much all the sets are practical. All of the apartment stuff is actual apartments. Like,
you can tell
everything that's shot like on the subway or like outside of the Royal Ballet or whatever it is all real. Like, there's almost no sets because the budget for this movie is $13 million.
Nothing.
That is no money
at all. Sliding some money over. Yeah.
Like, that is truly no money when you think about the fact that like Mila Kunis and Natalie Portman had to train for 6 months before this movie. They had to hire all of these dancers. All of the audience is CGI, which makes sense because like they're barely in it. But like that you're putting on these giant performance scenes, there's so much visual effects and like practical effects that they have to do.
Mm.
Oh my God. Like $13 million.
That's wild.
It's crazy. And it was like a 40-day shoot or something.
Oh my God.
It was fast.
I think that works to its benefit with that anxiety as we were talking about. Like, they're forced to sort of make these decisions and like running and gunning alongside like her on the street. Like, that makes sense that like that would be the vibe, you know what I mean?
Yes.
And like all of it like works in conjunction to the movie.
Yeah, it's great. It feels so real. And like I believe in the documentary, I think it was Darren Aronofsky, was like, we wanted to make sure that we kept the cinematography and sort of the setting as grounded as possible so it felt like believable that this could happen, which is hilarious when you think about when Thomas is talking about their version of Swan Lake. He's like, we're gonna do Swan Lake, but not like it's done before. We're gonna strip it down, make it raw and sensual and real. And
which
it's
is
like
this movie,
that's what you did. Well, okay, that's the other, first of all, robbed for best adapted screenplay, not even a nom. And I feel like it's because it's not a flashy screenplay. Okay.
Yes.
It doesn't have a ton of dialogue, it doesn't
but
have
it's good,
but it's so good, and the themes are perfect. There's like five layers of themes that all reflect back on each other.
Yes.
And everything that happens in the movie is a thing that happens in Swan Lake, and everything that happens in Swan Lake happens in the movie, and it's great. Reflective
it's so
of
good.
The filmmaking and the show and the characters. It's so good.
I mean, have you seen Swan Lake?
Yeah.
Love Swan Lake.
Yeah, good, it's good.
Good ballet.
Good ballet.
I like. I enjoy the music of it a lot.
Well, I think it only helps the film that it beats you over the head with Swan Lake at any given opportunity.
Right, yes. From the beginning, he's like, this is going to be Swan Lake.
It's all Swan Lake. I mean, she even has the dream about Swan Lake before he announces that they're doing Swan Lake at the ballet company. But everything from like fucking Swan Lake being her ringtone to the swan tile in her bathroom.
Well, I was gonna say, she has stuffed animals. There's like a black swan in her room with the swan, like everything about it.
But like the broken music box at the end, it's all the most obvious shit, and I love it so much. Right. I think it's so good.
Do you wanna, how did he, so like you were mentioning, like how did Aronofsky, he came across it because he wanted to do it. Because he saw the ballet, right?
Yeah.
And then, so like, what informed that, I guess?
His sister is, like, studied dance, so he's kind of familiar with the world. And then he was basically wanted to do this movie about a double and saw Swan Lake and was like, I should just combine them. I think I read some trivia that at one point he had conceived of a love story between a wrestler and a ballerina, which is where the wrestler and Black Swan came from. And he was like, I decided I should split them into two movies. And it's like, that was a really good idea.
Yeah.
Because that is far
too
much.
Now you have two movies.
Two movies for the price of one.
Boom, baby.
But from the beginning, it was about ballet, obviously, and it was about doubling. Yeah. So there you go.
And I mean, like, you can see, as I think it's been talked about, like, there are a lot of clear influences of this movie, whether it be it or not, whether like on Perfect Blue, which both of us have seen now,
right,
which is all like all about doubling, and specifically has like a lot of similar shots and storylines to this,
very
but
performance
like,
based. Yeah. Aronofsky never references it directly, like in interviews or something like that, but pretty much everyone that's seen it are like, yeah, so, like he must have
like his career
this.
Sort of like based on this anxiety movie.
Exactly. Yeah. The other unfortunate thing about Aronofsky, I mean, he mentioned early Cronenberg. That's not the unfortunate part. That's cool. But he's a Polanski stan. Mm. Like he references Roman Polanski's work a lot, like Rosemary's Baby and like The Tenant and Repulsion are like three huge influences for him.
Unfortunately,
he's,
good movies, but
terrible person. He's never sort of like
said
rejected it. And I believe he like signed essentially like a free Roman Polanski petition at some point. Look, I have no.
And I mean, he did direct the Andrew Yang like political commercial recently for New York.
Did he really?
Yeah. Aronofsky, maybe not the best of men. I guess we're discovering.
Well, I have no. Listen, I think it's a red flag when he started dating Jennifer Lawrence. I was like, she's a full grown woman. She can make her own decisions. Yeah. Like, I respect her, but I was like,
oh my God.
Dude, like, why are you just turning into Vincent Cassell's character?
Yeah, no,
in this
literally,
movie?
Why are you Tamar?
Yeah, like, gross. No, I have no love lost for Darren Aronofsky, but like, you know, this is one of the things where it's like he did direct this movie, but I wouldn't say that it's like his magnum opus. And I don't think he would call it his magnum opus either, because he really wasn't as involved with it as he is with like so many of his other movies.
What would you say that he would probably consider that then?
I mean, probably Mother.
Mother? Yeah.
Yeah. Which, ew.
Fascinating, yeah.
So,
I mean, I think this is his best movie he's ever made.
I would agree that this is far and away. Like, I don't think any of Aronofsky's other films even crack, like, my top 50.
Right.
Maybe Requiem, maybe. But mostly like this one because of the themes and, like, the world. And
I mean, it's
like,
unbelievable. And the acting, everything about this movie works. Like, I don't even know how you mentioned this. Is, like, one of my top 25 of all time.
I
know. This is one of my favorite movies ever. And it's, like, it's just unbelievable how far and, like, how every single thing in this movie works the way it's supposed to. I mean, like, we were just talking about the cast. As you were saying, like, Vincent Cassell is unbelievably cast in this movie.
Robbed
He's
of the Oscar
so
nom.
Good. And
robbed.
Barbara Hershey, unbelievable
rules.
Performance as her mother. Like, I mean, like, every single line delivery that she has, like, when she is just sitting there furious at, like, Natalie for having, like, spent the night, and you can just feel the, like, overprotective mothering, babying energy from her. And yeah. you understand their dynamic from childhood and how problematic this relationship is.
Yeah. Poor Nina. She does not have a single healthy relationship in her life.
Literally none.
Like, her whole life.
Go girl, just, get one relationship.
Like, not even. Because then it's like, did it even happen? Right. And also, like, is Mila Kunis insane? Like, she's right. a little bitchy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We did. Okay. Just to get through the other two who I think are iconic in this cast. Winona Ryder.
It's so good.
I mean, I forgot that it was Winona Ryder.
I always forget that it's her. I mean, not anymore.
She pops up. But, yeah. And you're like, oh my God. Because this is before her really big comeback. She's been away for a while.
Yeah.
And so she comes in for like three scenes, and one terrifies you, two shows you all the trauma that will come happen to Natalie, and three gives maybe two of the best line deliveries of all time.
Yeah.
Right?
The one that you mentioned earlier. Did she suck his cock?
The way that she says cock. Oh my God. Because it's like she like clicks her mouth at the end.
Yeah.
She's like, cock.
Yeah,
you know, I'm like, oh my God, Winona.
It's great. Yeah, I love her so much. I mean, the dressing room trashing scene too. She's just like, what?
Right.
So
or when
good.
She just stabs, she's literally stabbing her face.
Did you know they did that practically?
No.
They did pretty much
was it
everything.
Like a, was it a knife that like pushes in?
Retractable knife and cheek prosthetics.
Yeah.
I know far too much about like all the behind the scenes for this movie.
No,
but
this is important.
The only stuff that's CG for the most part is obviously the swan transformation. Like none of that's practical, but it looks extremely
Wait,
real.
She didn't?
Literally fuck you.
What did it question on the feathers?
Yeah.
Or not the feathers, but like when she pulls out like the little baby ones,
the
was
baby
that
feather?
Real or no?
It's real.
Cool.
Yeah. And her like skin rash is real, but then obviously they animated it in post is
right.
the other thing. That's
the
one
eyes?
Of my favorite thing. I don't know about the eyes because they could be colored contacts. I'm not sure.
But it's like such an intense red.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And then, I mean, they're swan eyes.
I mean, they're so it's so good.
The rash thing is like my favorite thing in the movie. We'll talk about it
really?
A little bit when we get
we'll get to
it.
Yeah.
Well, because it really ties into the idea that like it's this movie is all about power and arousal. And so like the first time that you see like her rash doing that thing is when she orgasms and like then the only other time it happens is when she's doing her coda as the Black Swan, which that's the power, that's like sex right there. Because it doesn't happen when she and Toma are doing their own
making
thing
out.
It's super interesting. Yeah, it gives me chills like every time that I see like the rash basically like undulate, and because it's like feathers,
right.
you know?
Yeah.
Oh, it's so
fluffing.
Cool.
And the last man I wanted to mention.
Oh yes.
Is your man.
Seb Stan.
Seb Stan comes in as Jerry or Tom.
His name is Andrew.
Andrew, but yes, in the they refer to him as Jerry.
As Jerry.
Yes.
I thought that the guy that played Tom was Alexander Ludwig for a couple of minutes this time. I was like, have I just never realized that Alexander Ludwig is in this? But it's not.
It's some
other nice blonde boy.
Yeah, just an irrelevant sort of. I mean, I'm sure he's fine.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah, he's good in this.
Yeah. No,
yeah. I wish he was in it more.
I mean, I kind of love that he's just like a one scene performance.
Which is one scene.
Yeah.
They don't even go dance with him.
No.
I think that he might be technically in the club scene, but you can't see shit during that scene. You have no idea.
Absolutely no idea what's
going on.
I mean, for being such a low budget, I think it's phenomenal what they pull out. And I think Natalie obviously will discuss, but like this is one of her greatest performances ever.
This is
and
the
like
performance.
Do you it's unfortunate because I think that this win makes her lose Jackie, which I think she should have won for.
I also, there's so much about like the Jackie loss that hurts me so much. The fact that she was like 8 3/4 months pregnant and was like,
it's unbelievable.
I'm not sitting there for like 3 hours to lose and like didn't do that much press for the movie because she shouldn't have had to. She was so pregnant. And I think
right.
that like the fact that the Oscars, I think a little bit saw that as a slap in the face, it just is so emblematic of like why Hollywood sucks and why it's terrible to be a woman in Hollywood and all this shit. And also, isn't that the year?
Emma
is that
Stone wins.
That's Emma Stone wins.
Yeah.
But
I mean,
which is a fine
love Emma
win.
Stone, but it's like she's given better performances, I think.
Oh, I
and
think
like,
that
if
it's
if you look
so
at that
weird.
Category, it's like Isabel Huppert for Elle, Ruth Negga for Loving, Meryl Streep for Florence Foster Jenkins.
Yeah, a joke.
Like, Natalie gives the strongest performance out of all those women. Like, she needed that W.
Yeah, I wonder if it's sort of like the cinephile split, the Isabel Huppert and Natalie Portman vote, because those are both, like, you know, powerhouse performances.
Yeah.
And then, like, the normies were like, well, Emma Stone, obviously. I don't even, obviously, like, I mean, but, I love Emma Stone. I just, yeah, it's like you said, that performance is, like, not really at the top for me.
But I mean, like, even if we were talking about Best Actress, like, we should have included 20th Century Women with Annette Bening, because she that was also that year, and she didn't even get a nom.
Right, and it's,
and she was so good in that movie.
So it's like, I mean, if you're cynical, you lose Ruth Negga, which is rude because she's amazing and Loving.
I think
if you're smart, you lose Meryl obviously. Yeah. But it's like, come on.
I know you're not going to lose. Well, I mean, at this point, how many noms do you need, Queen?
But it's like, you can't be Meryl Streep in basically any movie and not get nominated.
A nom, yeah. Yeah.
It's crazy.
Not when wrong.
She was nominated for an Oscar for fucking Into the Woods.
Here's a question for you.
What?
I just have one quick question.
Yeah.
Do they go into the woods?
They do. And then,
isn't Sebastian Stan in that movie?
No.
Am I thinking of Richard Madden? Who was the other white boy in that movie?
Chris Pine.
And wow.
Billy Magnuson.
That's who I'm thinking of. Yeah. Billy Magnuson. Okay.
He's so good in that movie.
Interesting. Not seen, won't see.
Please don't. It's very bad, but you should watch Agony on YouTube.
Cool.
It's the only good scene.
Who sings that one?
It's Chris Pine and Billy Magnuson.
Love it.
In a waterfall.
Love it.
When they like rip their shirts open.
Great.
It's great.
Do we cover?
No. Straightest musical ever. No. Jordan's giving me like a look. Absolutely not.
Anyways, okay, back to this movie. Back to a good movie. This might be the most focused episode we'll ever have.
Yeah, because we don't have time.
No, I know.
We got to get through some shit.
I will say, just while we're on the casting thing.
Yes.
Mila Kunis, this, I think, is definitely her best movie she's ever done or performance in any media ever, right? It's like this... Maybe Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
I was going to say, it's unfortunately not a very high bar.
Maybe Ted. I'm kidding.
No, God.
Like, what else? I mean, like, she's like Oz the Great and Powerful. She's probably the one giving the best performance in the movie.
You think she's better than Rachel Weisz in that movie?
She gets turned into the Wicked Witch of the West, right? It's Mila.
I think so.
Yeah, I think she gives the better performance.
Okay. Noted.
Unfortunately.
It's been so long since I saw that movie, but I have seen it.
I truly forget that film.
Yeah.
But no, I just think it is pretty much impossible. I'm looking through her filmography now and I'm like, I mean, I like That 70s Show. You know what I mean? But this I think is the movie that really does put her more on the map, because then after this you have her do Ted, Oz the Great and Powerful, Jupiter Ascending, which then becomes the vehicle for her to have a lead for.
Jupiter Ascending kind of good, though, is the thing.
What if she was the Queen of Bees?
I like that movie.
I think it's unfortunately lower on my Wachowski's list. But I do like it.
It's higher. I feel like you really like Cloud Atlas.
I love Cloud Atlas,
and
yeah.
I don't particularly like Cloud Atlas.
This is where we flip-flop.
So, yeah. But Wachowski's, I mean, we could, I mean, we'll, we should
we'll do. We'll do all of them.
We should do a whole month on Wachowski's. Yeah.
But so she is that. Yes. You have A Bad Mom's Christmas, Bad Moms, The Spy Who Dumped Me, then she's pretty much gone. So it's like you have this movie really kind of, I think, in conjunction with That 70s Show, kind of these are the two pinnacle points for her career. But then after this, she doesn't pop really in anything. And then she doesn't do much afterwards.
She made probably $2 billion on the Bad Moms franchise. So,
I'm sure.
Good for her.
I mean,
she's awesome in this movie. She's
rocks. Incredible.
When
she rolls in late and she's sorry, no, I don't need to warm up.
Yeah.
Iconic.
She's very hot. And
the tattoo. Brooke, the tattoo.
Oh my God. The tattoo is iconic. But she, I love that scene of her when she is basically doing the Black Swan dance. When she's in rehearsal and she's dancing with her hair down, and she is sort of the idea is that she's an imprecise dancer, but she's so passionate.
Right.
And Natalie Portman is the most precise, but lacks the passion.
Right.
It's so perfect.
Into the themes of the movie too.
It directly reflects on their characters.
Yes.
And also, can I just say, so the costuming in this movie is thank you.
Really
thank
good.
Thank you for letting me talk on the podcast.
I famously never let you
Never let me talk. The costuming in this movie is hilariously obtuse.
and I love it so much.
Oh, you don't like it?
Oh, no, I love it.
I was going to say, I love it.
It's awesome. Well, that's the thing. That's what I was saying about, like, maximalist filmmaking. Yeah. You're like, oh, gee, we're going to put Natalie Portman in white and baby pink and Mila Kunis in black.
Question for you. Do you think that's coding or tying anything into the themes of the movie?
Yeah, Jordan.
Are you saying that maybe Natalie is more virginal, more repressed, maybe needs to, like, use the plot of the movie to come out? To, like, become the Swan Queen?
Yeah. Do you want to know when she first starts wearing black?
Tell me when.
After she goes out with Mila.
Yep.
Yep. That is the first time that she wears black in the whole movie.
And it's also her sexual awakening.
It is her sexual... That is the sexual awakening scene.
When you first watched this...
Yes.
Did you... Well, I think it's impossible. When people are like, is that movie queer? You're like... The whole movie hinges on her, like, having a sexual awakening with, like, a lesbian.
With a woman, yes. Yeah.
Not, maybe bisexual.
Mila Kunis is bisexual in this movie.
Or just all in her head.
That's the question. Is she bisexual?
Mila or Natalie?
Mila. Well, Lily. Yes.
I'm going to say character. Maybe Mila bi, but I want to say Natalie definitely lesbian.
Oh, Natalie.
Maybe.
Yes.
Learning.
I think that she... I don't think we need to put a label
on
her.
Let's not label her. But, like, basically attracted to women.
Definitely
in some way, shape,
attracted
or form.
To women.
Did you pick up on that so clearly or no?
Yes. I feel like this is one of the movies that, like, it... You do have to sort of, like, make your own decision and then stick to it. Because it is easy to say that, like, she's projecting a power fantasy or sort of, like, needing to... get over her virginal side. Natalie, like, needs to get over her own virginal side to, like, fully step into the role. Like, I think you can read it as, like, not queer in a way. I think that it's obviously not as fun and also stupid to do that. But I definitely do see the angle that you can come at it from, where it's like, well, she needs to basically, like, conquer herself in order to, like, fully embody these two sides of herself. Like, she needs to conquer sexuality with herself, which is what that scene between she and Mila Kunis is, essentially. But you can also be like, yeah, it's gay.
Yeah.
I think, like, that scene, the Natalie Portman Mila Kunis sex scene, a pivotal moment in cinema.
Hot.
For everyone. I like that they, this is gonna sound bad, I like that they have her orgasm.
Yes.
Like, that they don't cut away from it being like the sex scene, because what's important is, like, that she comes.
She does. Yes. Yeah. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the whole, like, crux of the scene.
Like, that's what's important.
Like, I mean,
the
whole movie
scene
is, like, teasing her doing it, and then she does it. Yeah.
But she does it. So there's that. But, like, I think that this.
It's my turn to come.
My turn.
Sorry.
Yes. Hey, you got to be a generous lover. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's very important. I think that that scene has unfortunately kind of made it into like the lesbian YouTube compilation world. When people are like, do you remember how hot that scene is?
For sure.
Like, fucking, like, this wasn't made for you. Get out of here. But also, it's Darren Aronofsky. So maybe it was made for them. You know, I don't know.
No, I know. I get it. I mean, I don't know. I think, especially watching this time, I think it's, like, kind of hard to, at least for me, not see the queerness of it. And maybe that's just because we've done the podcast for too long or whatever. But it's,
no, I mean, obviously.
It's just, like, it's really just so clear whether or not it's, like, a positive portrayal or whatever. But it's, like, Mila comes in sort of as, like, the obviously, like, as we've been saying, very clear, like, corrupting influence. Like, she's in black, forces her to drink, do drugs, have sex, etc., and is, like, bringing her towards, like, the lesbian side of her. But then again, in the beginning of it, Natalie is really just such a coddled person. Like, her mother is just so controlling and overprotective, and, like, Natalie refers to her constantly as, like, mommy, and, like, she's so babied that, like, you need sort of this corrupting influence to come out and, like, bring you out. And whether or not it's bad or not, but she's, like, awakening her to the fact that, like, she hasn't lived or, like, experienced herself because her mother hasn't given her the space to do so.
Yeah.
And so she's allowed to, like, start to sexually experiment because she, like, opens herself up to that door.
She needs to have sex with somebody.
Right, exactly. Literally anybody, even herself.
She needs to become an adult.
Yeah. Did you see I wrote down a couple Letterboxd reviews because they're actually iconic for this movie, but there was one that was, I relate to Natalie Portman because I too take every artistic criticism too intensely to a personal level and love jerking off and stabbing myself.
Yeah, yeah. A classic review of this movie.
It's a great one.
Big mood.
Hannah Montana one.
Relatable content.
The Hannah Montana. Nobody's perfect. You live and you learn it. Nina, think again, bitch.
I mean, that is literally what this movie is. I will get to the themes in a second.
Yeah.
Or the themes of perfection, which I definitely want to talk about.
Yeah,
and also,
of course.
I think that relates very nicely to the queer reading. But yeah. I just want to say, I only wrote one paper on this movie in college. Can you believe? You would have thought that
That's
I
shocking.
Would have written like six. I only wrote one. I wrote it for the psychology class that I absolutely hated. So terrible.
What was the paper?
The paper was about, it was a little about Freud because like it was required. And like if you're in a psychology class, you have
always
to talk
go
about
back
Freud.
To him, yeah.
But it was mostly about Lacan and the mirror stage, which is basically like when children become aware of themselves as like an entity, and how yeah, exactly, it's called the mirror stage because
yes.
It's like
no yeah,
you ever hold your cat up to a
well,
mirror
that,
and you're
I
like
was,
that's you.
I was gonna reference Lewin in this because Lewin had his own growth and like having raised a son
yes
through the pandemic, I very early introduced him to mirrors and he would run and attack the mirror
yeah.
And now he's learned that
he is
in fact the one looking back at him, and now he is a self-obsessed cat.
Congratulations, you just have discovered what the mirror
yes.
phase is.
Lewin, congratulations.
Lacan would be proud.
Yes.
But like basically the paper that I wrote was about how Nina coming to terms with like herself as an adult mostly by like turning into a sexual being is like her version of the mirror stage, because that's when she unlocks herself as
yes.
like the Swan Queen.
100%.
That's she can like embody the two different sides of herself, the two parts that she has to play in the ballet once she becomes like actualized as a person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so.
I mean, it's this movie is obsessed with fucking mirrors. There's
yes,
not like a
is.
Scene that goes by where you don't see a mirror in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
And like everything is constantly revolving around that.
And it's all about doubling, and she sees like basically the evil double in mirrors so frequently. And I love all of those shots.
I mean, the shot of Natalie standing above her where blood starts to drip and then chokes her in the tub.
Yeah.
Iconic.
Yeah. I mean, there's that one. There's obviously when she like cuts her finger
mm-hmm.
and like is staring at herself in the mirror. And then there are the two like iconic mirror shots of her double turning around before the lights go out in the studio, and then the one when she's at her costume fitting and there's like the scratching.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I'm
and
so obsessed.
Then well the, with all of them in the mirror, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, how many other doubles? There's the double in the hospital where you think that it's
right.
Winona, then it turns it to Natalie.
They're obviously the sex scene,
right.
Which is like the
gets choked out.
Exactly. Like the not queer reading is that like she's having sex with herself and
right.
like achieving.
Well,
like,
the way that they show that too is like you shoot her like once you get home, it's only like on Natalie, like you don't see Mila really, like they enter and then she's gone.
Yeah.
And so it just focuses in on Natalie and her mom, and you're like, oh okay, so the way that they're shooting this, you're like, is Mila still there? So you go back to the bedroom and she's sort of just like,
she's
oh
there.
Hi,
hey.
And so you are like,
yeah,
what's going on here?
And you don't actually know if they fucked or not.
I'm gonna say they probably didn't.
I would also say they probably didn't, but also it's sort of like the ladies, is it gay to have sex with yourself? Ladies, is it gay to fantasize having sex with another woman when you're really
yeah.
having sex with yourself?
Iconic. I mean, that's the whole thing. She was like, did you have a fantasy about me?
Oh my god, did you have, I believe the line is oh damn, did you have some crazy lesbo sex dream about
yeah, yeah,
me
yeah.
And then of course Natalie's like and she's like, you did, you fantasized about me, oh my god.
Well, I think
was I good
the reason like the script definitely gets held back is I think because it is, as we said, like A, not a lot of dialogue, and B, then the dialogue is like so much about the themes and there's not like subtlety to it, and so people were
so
probably just like, I don't want to like nom this, but it's a fucking great script.
It's great. It has to be obvious. I mean, even you want to talk about like cool thematic shit, I love the whole arc with Tomah being like or you know, the idea that Tomah only calls Beth, who's the Winona Ryder character, his little princess because she's special to him.
Yes.
And then at the end, like once Natalie
yeah.
has like basically done the perfect performance, he calls her his
little
princess.
Princess. And then she dies.
And then she dies.
I always forget every single fucking time that I watch that she does the perfect performance and then she goes down back to the stage, realizes she stabbed herself, and then has to go up and finish. I always
right.
think it's she does this thing, then goes up and then jumps off. Like, I always forget there's that like 2 minute beat in between.
Because it's a three act. It's basically like the third act is a three act structure.
Right.
With her failing as the white swan, totally.
The third act has three acts, you're saying. Yes.
Totally killing it as the black swan and then dying as the white swan again.
Yeah.
Fucking awesome.
Good.
Do you want to talk about perfection?
Let's do it.
Okay.
100.
A great movie about perfection.
The perfection.
A great movie. Ooh. I like that movie. I think we'll cover it. We could.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I put it on the list because I was like, we should talk about it.
We can talk about it. Yeah. I would like to talk about it.
I think that movie's good. Talk about a maximalist movie. That's why I loved it. I was like, this is the so thing is, much.
It does it to a. I would love. Yeah. I'll save my thoughts for a discussion.
I know.
Because I agree.
It's going to be a contentious F because I think that movie's really good.
Yeah. Yeah.
What can I say?
We have another old guard on our hands.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this is obviously a great movie about perfection and obsession and like how fucked up creativity is and how easy it is to like get sucked into a role. I just think that like, as someone who's like a little obsessive about certain things.
Really?
And I feel like you can relate.
Oh, 100%.
To this.
Yes.
It's a really good movie that's about like, you do. I mean, that line that Tomas says where he's like, the only person standing in your way is you.
Yes.
Like that's what it is.
100%.
No one is going to, even if like you're surrounded by the most toxic people in the world, sometimes nobody is going to push you as hard as you push yourself.
I think at the end of the day, that is what it is. Either A, push you as hard as you can push yourself, or B, stop you from doing the thing that you want to do the most.
Right.
And like, it's like everything, any flaw in her way is her not allowing herself to open up or to do this thing. Like, she has to realize that in order to be perfect, she has to accept like these other parts of herself.
Right. I mean, it's very much like you can't allow yourself any type of like failure or like stumble because then it's not perfect anymore. You know, it's some real close to home shit. But I think that I really like how, like you were saying, she has to accept other parts of herself to like unlock perfection essentially. And one of the parts that she has to accept is like this queerness, this sexuality of being like, I have to basically come to the terms with the fact that I like girls and only then can I like actually get myself like to the place that I need to get to.
Yeah.
Because the Black Swan is all about sexuality.
Right. It's about seducing.
Right. Not necessarily sexuality in like a queer way, but sexuality in like
being a sexual being. Yes.
Like that is what the Black Swan is. So she has to basically be like, I don't think I'm straight to perform that.
Yeah. Goes to her mom. Mom, we gotta talk.
I actually can't dance this role unless I come out to you like, right now.
Mom, I gotta fuck a woman. I'm sorry.
I really just have to. But I think that's...
I fucked them both.
I also love her little delivery. Ding, 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 ding.
The ding, ding, ding. Is actually, I like that better than the... So I wish she goes, ding, 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 ding. Ding, it's ding, so ding, good. Ding. Natalie, the way that she is able to do the fucking grace and like... teeny tiny nervous Nina and then the like raw terrifying Nina and then the in between is what a fucking actress.
I know.
Natalie Portman, my goddamn queen.
This must have been like one of the most taxing performances ever because it's not only did she lose a ton of weight and like dance intensely, like intense training for 6 months. It's just there's so much that she has to do with her face
like
and
emotionally,
her body
yes.
simultaneously and go be like five different characters
yes.
at different stages.
No, I mean, it's her best performance of her career, I would say.
It is.
This
it's
Jackie,
transcendent.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean,
Jackie is like a totally like I'm definitely
no,
not disagreeing
yeah.
with you. It's just
it's
such
a different
vibe.
So different. Yeah.
I
like
mean,
grief
she
and
has
trauma.
The range
but this is like
and
everything.
Very quiet.
And she's also funny. Natalie is so funny and no movie really gets her comedy and like we get it in a glimpse with the ding, 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 ding.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know if you've seen her on SNL and stuff like that,
yeah,
but her SNL performances are incredible. And like her song with the like, she is very funny and movies need to let Natalie Portman be funny again.
Yeah. Is she funny in No Strings Attached or is she just kind of boring in that?
I haven't seen
it either.
I haven't seen that. And I haven't seen the other one.
Sleeping with other people.
Yeah. Speaking of Mila and Natalie.
No, sleeping with other people.
Or no, it's No Strings Attached and Friends with Benefits.
Friends with Benefits. And then there's also Sleeping with Other People, which is Anne Hathaway, Jake Gyllenhaal.
No, that's Love and Other Drugs.
That's Love and Other Drugs. Sleeping with Other People is Allison Brie, Jason Sudeikis.
Are you sure?
There are too many white people.
Do you want to be sure? All right. Are you confirming Sleeping with Other People
is Allison Brie and Jason Sudeikis?
Yes. All right. And the answer is Jason Sudeikis and Allison Brie, Adam Scott. Yes. Boom. Jason Mantzoukas, Natasha Lyonne. Is this a good movie?
It's like an, I don't think it, is it Apatow? It might be.
It looks like it's an Apatow movie.
It's very much in
No,
that.
Leslie Headland directed it.
Well, that's why it's so good, because it's Leslie Headland. Anyway.
And it, oh, interesting, it made $0 at the box office.
But people are obsessed with it.
Yeah. No, like, I see it on Letterboxd a lot.
It's apparently really
yeah.
fucking good. I've never seen it.
Anyways.
I've never seen any of those movies. Yes, Natalie Portman is very funny.
I'm so happy I invested my chips from age four.
She has the range. I know. You have a giant crush on her.
Absolutely. I met her in real life once at our office. And it was maybe the coolest moment of my life.
I mean, we saw her at Vox Lux.
Yeah, but no, like, I mean,
but you, like,
met her.
It's very cool for you.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I was found dead on site.
Yeah, and here you are somehow.
I know, it's the ghost of, it's my double.
Oh my God. I'm
shocked I didn't do a bit in which halfway through the episode I turned into another me.
Yeah, because that worked so well the first time that you did it.
Yeah, it did.
I would like to let you know that people that listen to the show will every now and then be like, I really don't, that was like a really bad bit. Like, they still talk about it. No, yeah. But like, not in a good way, Jordan.
No, I know. They're like, not good. I know.
But not even like ironically.
Yeah.
Or they're like, wow, that was like so bad. I loved it. Like, no.
No, I know.
They're just like bad. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I was looking at Natalie Portman's IMDb and I was like, Natalie Portman has never given a bad performance. And then I scrolled a little bit further and I was like, just kidding. Are you forgetting the hit film Lucy in the Sky?
Ah, yeah.
Jordan?
No, I know.
She makes like 80% really good decisions, and she's good in a lot of movies that like are not good, but she is good in them.
Yes.
But
yes.
She has a couple of flubs in there. Cause I was like, I don't think she's ever given a bad performance. And I was like, that's definitely not the case.
But like all right, I'm looking at
Annihilation.
It Annihilation
is so good.
She's gonna be great in Thor and Love and Thunder.
Like, I think that she is good in the Thor movies. They just don't give her enough to do.
Exactly. Well, she was famously in Jane Got a Gun. How was she in that?
She's fine.
You know,
that whole movie is fine.
I have a question. Did she have a gun?
She did.
Jane did have a gun.
That
okay.
movie is actually kind of a train wreck, but it's kind of good. I think I mentioned it on the 300 episode.
Yes, you did.
I was
yeah.
like, it's a Western, you know?
I mean, I love her.
What do you want me to do?
Iconic in V for Vendetta, of course.
Iconic?
I mean, yeah, I am looking at it now. I do see
There's some blips.
But overall, I think positive, net positive.
Oh, net
overall,
positive.
Overall, her net positive in almost anything.
Yeah.
It's like she is elevating whatever she's in.
Yes.
Has she does not do TV, though, and has not really done a big TV thing yet.
She is a real deal movie star.
So I'm interested to see if she ever gets drawn to TV.
Well, let me tell you, she is doing a, like, thriller TV show with, hang on, now I have to look. I'm sorry. Can you vamp about something?
Yes.
While I look up what this is?
Yes.
She's doing some TV thing.
Natalie Portman, she was in Song to Song famously, which is a Terrence Malick movie that I
okay.
am okay with. She's also in Knight of Cups. She's in a lot of Malicks, honestly.
So okay, yes, I was
there
right. I was right. Okay,
what is
she
it?
Is going to be in a TV miniseries called Lady of the Lake, which is like a thriller.
About the Lady of
No,
Aww.
It's like a modern day thriller, and it's her and Lupita Nyong'o, which like I might just be dead. She's also in the new Todd Haynes movie with Julianne Moore.
That's a movie though, yeah.
Which is
sounds incredible.
Which sounds really good. Well, I was gonna bring it up because like Lady in the Lake is definitely not gay. I'm sure it's about like women, but like May December sounds gay.
Yes. No, it
That's
sounds very gay.
What I'm all I'm saying.
They're going to Maine.
Yeah, and it's gonna be gay.
I'm very excited for it.
And I need to find out who they cast as like the guy who's gonna be in the middle of Natalie Portman and Julianne Moore, because I feel like that will say
That'll
everything.
Be important, yeah.
Well, it's called May December, so I don't know if it's about like a May December romance. Like
do
if
you
it's like,
remember?
No, not even that's September,
May
first of all.
To do December.
Anyway.
What is the so Lady in the Lake, it's just zero reference to King Arthur at all.
No.
That's so disappointing.
It's like Top of the Lake China Girl. It's like a it's like a thriller type thing.
But like they should do I feel like they could do a Lady of the Lake something.
There was that Netflix series with Katherine Langford called Cursed, which was about the Lady of the Lake.
Oh.
So there
you
go.
You know what the Lady of the Lake should do is just get out of that water and kill Arthur. That's what she should do. Hashtag girl boss that lake. Should we talk about the plot of the movie?
Yes.
Because I think we should, because this movie has a good plot, as we've mentioned. And it moves. I forget that this movie's like 90 minutes.
It is 108 minutes.
Okay. Oh, yeah. But it moves.
It moves.
Yeah.
And there's like not any slow scenes. I love, this is a good film with a lot of quick scenes that say a lot.
Yes.
A big pet peeve that I have about indie films is they will often have scene snippets, but the scene snippets are just like, okay, cool, it's a scene of like people doing some things. Like it is not, I don't know,
propulsive.
Yeah, exactly. And I feel like every small scene.
This whole movie is just all hinged upon like using every single frame to make sure that it's tying back. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the plot of Swan Lake is also the plot of this movie.
Right.
But they're also doing the plot of Swan Lake in the movie.
In the movie,
God,
yes.
There's nothing layered. There's nothing hotter.
And interesting, Swan Lake, they're doing Black Swan?
Yeah. Cool. I mean, they are.
They should do that. That would be iconic if like like a ballet did Black Swan, but like
Black Swan the ballet.
Yeah.
But the, so then they have to do Swan Lake within the Black Swan ballet.
Exactly. Yes.
Oh my god. Oh Jesus.
Sweaty.
Woof.
I love it though.
Okay, so
it opens.
We meet Nina
in a dream.
It opens in a dream of Nina Sayers, the luminous Natalie Portman, dancing a dream sequence with Rothbart, who is the villain of Swan Lake.
The makeup really good,
really awesome.
Goddamn,
guess what? Yeah. All practical.
Very clearly so. But
it's
so
awesome.
Good.
And he turns into a bird in the middle of it, and they dance like they dance like a portion of Swan Lake.
Yeah.
The Bolshoi choreography.
How much of the do we know? How much of the actual Swan Lake score we hear or no?
Oh, all of it. Cool. Basically all of it. Obviously there's like the Black Swan score, but basically all of the music that you hear on stage, obviously, and in the dream sequence, and in like the
I mean like how much of the actual Swan Lake do we hear?
Oh,
like do we hear a lot? Because I feel
most
like we hear a lot
it.
Of the same motifs, but I don't know if we hear like the whole,
it's not that long of a ballet. And they mostly focus on like the three main
like
portions.
Yeah.
Yeah, which is White Swan, Black Swan, White Swan.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Odile, who is the Black Swan, her coda is like very iconic. That's the swan transformation sequence.
Yes.
It's so hard. A coda, for if you don't know, is when you do a bunch of pirouettes in a row that are all interconnected, and it's really hard, and it's murder on your feet,
and
it's
rules.
Very difficult because you like have to keep your balance just in
ballet,
an insane
hard.
Way. It's so difficult.
Do you have a favorite ballet?
I've always been kind of partial to Peter and the Wolf because my parents would play that for me when I was growing up.
My parents would play it a lot for me too.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
Yeah. What, do you have one?
It's either Swan Lake, because I actually, before I knew about Swan Lake, I had a book that was like a riff on Swan Lake where it was like a wolf watching swans perform Swan Lake.
Oh, interesting.
And he wanted to like eat the swans.
Ooh.
But then he like fell in love with the ballet.
That's so
iconic.
Funny.
I really do like Coppelia. And like some of
the, oh my god, I was
ones.
Literally about to mention Coppelia. You're shitting me.
Kind of whips.
Coppelia absolutely whips. I was going to mention
it's
it.
So good. And another hot take here.
Yeah.
Really hot take. The Nutcracker, I am like every Christmas season, I listen to that probably 100 times.
I had so many books.
It's so good.
About the Nutcracker in various forms.
It's so, I mean, like, obviously it's like the most popular ballet maybe of all time, but like goddamn,
for a reason.
Sorry.
it always annoys me that people would be like, oh well, the Nutcracker pas de deux is like the best thing, and it's like, that is the song during which I sleep. I like the exciting
that
songs.
To me, I agree. Do you have a favorite?
I like the Hot Chocolate, the
hot oh, we've got it.
Not that one, but you know what. I mean,
was, yeah was that not
the, like the,
that was good,
that was very good, the like Turkish kind
yeah.
of like inspired yeah. Hot Chocolate one. I mean, the Candy Cane one is really good too.
Iconic.
How about you, do you have a favorite?
I really like the Russians.
Oh, that's a good one. They're what are they, what candy are they? I don't remember. They're,
I don't know.
A certain kind of candy. I feel like maybe they're like the little like hard candies. I don't
probably
know.
I'm guessing. Anyways, moving on. Vincent Cassel, fantastic.
So good
comes
in this
on.
Movie.
He really is just so great.
Big
in all he does.
Dick
love
energy.
Him.
he plays Thomas. I love when she yells at him and says his name that way.
Yes.
Hilarious. Thomas. He's great in this. He's very scary, but also very
manipulative,
sexy.
Controlling, evil.
But like just sort of charming sexy. Enough, you know? Yeah.
Oh no, this is like, I very much am not someone who's like, ooh, like power dynamics, but I don't know. In this movie, I'm like, yeah,
ooh, power dynamics. Cassell, yeah.
I understand. I can see.
I mean, the power dynamic that I'm obsessed with is Mila, where she like is like making out with the guy in the third act, and she like grabs his dick before Natalie Portman goes on, and Natalie's just watching like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god.
Yeah, there's oh my god. You want to talk about like make out power moves? My favorite moment of Vincent Cassell in this movie, because like obviously he's very like controlling and very like exacting the entire movie, but at the end, after Natalie Portman does her epic coda and like runs off stage and makes out with him,
hot, and he is so blown away.
He like giggles.
Yeah, no, he does. He literally like has like a boyish smile. Yeah. He's like, oh my god, I just got a kiss from Natalie. Like, how sexy is she?
Like, that is my favorite moment of him in the entire film, because like you just unlock a side of him that you're like, you're never gonna see that again.
No,
like
absolutely,
the
not.
Character is never gonna be like,
no,
because
she's gonna be dead.
Yeah, but also like she did that. You know,
yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah,
she
a perfect performance.
Did that,
one may say.
And then she goes back for her encore while he's like giggling. It's awesome.
It has like makeup smudges on his face.
Yeah,
it's great.
Hot.
Cool.
Oh, God.
Anyways,
hot.
So she lives with her mother,
Barbara
played
Hershey.
By Barbara Hershey, the great Oscar nominated, one of the greatest like
what
living
is she
actors.
Nominated for?
Oh God, I had it pulled up.
She's really awesome. Do you want to, you know, what's so funny is that like, I didn't know who she was when I watched this movie for the first time, obviously, but she has a pretty awesome role in the hit ABC show Once Upon a Time.
Who is she in Once Upon a Time?
She plays the Queen of Hearts, I think.
Ah. But she, okay. So she got her Oscar nom for The Portrait of a Lady. And
oh,
she
yes.
also then had Golden Globes as well for Last Temptation of Christ, where she played Mary Magdalene.
Oh, yes. She's very good in that movie.
Yeah.
With King Defoe.
Yes.
A legend and
Who
a star.
Who is she in Once Upon a Time? Sorry.
She plays the Queen of Hearts. And
oh, iconic.
So then when I watched Black Swan again, I was like, oh, shit.
It's the
Barbara
Queen of
Hershey. It's Academy Award nominee
Barbara Hershey.
She
also star of Once Upon a Time.
Yeah, I mean, she's awesome in this, and I actually think that like she and Natalie Portman look very similar.
I agree.
Yeah, they look very related.
You also get so much history with her as well, having been a former dancer.
Yeah,
but you don't, they don't like talk about it, they don't play into it. There's no like big dramatic scene where she was like, I used to be on the stage and now I'm not. It's just like,
yeah,
you know it from the character. Like,
yeah,
it's very clear that she was not able to succeed and now has channeled all of her energy into her child and will paint horrifying pictures of her.
Yeah, my career. What career? The one I gave up to have you.
Mm-hmm.
You were in the chorus, or you were 28,
yeah.
I think,
no,
is what she says.
Then it's the chorus later. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. I'm the Swan Queen. You're the one that never left the chorus.
Yep. Yep.
I can't handle it. I'm the Swan Queen.
It's my time.
My turn.
Turn. When she
it's
just starts yelling
turn.
At the end, it's so good.
Yes.
Anyway, sorry. Let's
After
get there.
She does the stabby stabby.
Yes. So she lives with her mother. Very overprotective.
Extremely, like, the apartment, like, basically gives me hives. Everything is pink.
Yes.
And fluffy and very much like little girl ballet
Every
studio.
Stereotype that you could assume
Stuffed
for, like, a young girl.
Animals,
yeah.
Like, the music box. It's
it's terrifying.
Ugh. Yeah.
Her mom's paintings are very upsetting.
Yes, that was definitely one of the perfect blue rips. Having watched it last night, there's like this scene when all of like these pinup posters are talking, and I was like, that's very much. Yeah, but yeah, those those paintings are
spooky.
Messed
if,
up.
If I ever walked into a room and my parent had that many of me, I would immediately walk out and never
it
return
is
home.
Such a red flag if anyone like paints pictures
that
of you
many
from
of you?
When you were a child. Like,
no.
I think not.
No.
So yeah, basically everything starts for Miss Nina when Toma announces that they're going to be doing Swan Lake, and Natalie Nina is like determined to win the role of the Swan Queen, but you have to be able to embody both roles, the White Swan and the Black Swan. And Mila Kunis is kind of like her competition, but not at first. Her competition is like some other random dancer in the company, mm-hmm. Veronica. And at the same time, Winona Ryder, who plays Beth McIntyre, is like the old soloist who's getting pushed out. So they need a new Swan Queen. So everyone's fighting for it. I mean, what's like the first important thing that happens? I guess the kiss, right?
Yeah,
that's
I would
like,
say
that's
probably.
That's the catalyst for her getting the role.
Like, she starts to find, like, scratch marks. Or I guess, yeah.
Yeah, when she gets the role is when everything goes
yeah.
downhill.
Yeah.
Because basically what happens This is, it's a very relevant movie. Do you know what I mean? Like, it, like, oh. I feel like it's stayed, it was relevant. It stayed relevant.
It's never left the cultural consciousness. No.
But like, how fucked up is it to go ask for a role? Like, you put on some lipstick, right, maybe, and then like have your supervisor, like your boss,
do something terrible to you.
Just like,
yeah,
grab you,
yes,
and make out with you.
Oh, you bit me.
And then she bites him like a badass.
Oh, she should.
But then she's so terrified. And she's like, I'm sorry.
Well, he's like, why did you put on makeup? And it's like, oh my God.
Why did you come here all dolled up if you don't actually want to fight for the part?
And it's the way that she also, the makeup on her too, you can tell it's like not really good.
She looks like a kid.
Right. Exactly. Like exactly.
Yeah. And then of course, after that is the whore on the mirror and lipstick,
yep,
scene.
I mean,
which is awesome.
One of the greatest things that has ever been put on celluloid.
They had Natalie Portman write it. Yes. So like, you know, to go
we
in
will
with
tweet
the
it.
Idea of doubling.
We will tweet it.
I'm going to find the clip because after she writes it, she's like, heart, smiley face.
So good.
It's really cute. And then everything quickly starts
goes downhill
to fall apart.
Nothing good happens
as
after
she's
this.
Trying to train. She like can't tap into the black swan element.
She
just,
needs to
she
be
can't
raw
be sexy.
Sexual energy, baby. Yeah. And she does not have it.
And Tomas tries to seduce her, or like, you know, seduces her and is then like, I was just seducing you. You should have been seducing me. It is very
intense
dancing / making out scene. I'm just going to zoom past it real quick.
Nina asks her out to drinks.
Lily asks Nina out to drinks. Everyone. Yes. Yeah.
Right. Very... That's probably the next big thing, I would think.
Yeah. Because
it kind of unlocks the sexual energy to her.
It starts to get exciting. I mean, obviously, there's all these little like moments of she's like finding weird scratches on her back and like thinks that she's seeing herself in mirrors and her reflection is like looking at her and stuff like this. Like it's all sort of like
doubling, doppelgangers.
And you see a lot of rehearsal, which I think is good. Oh my God. Wait. Oh my God. I have to mention this one thing before we get to Nina and Lily having drinks is that Natalie Portman is married to the choreographer of this film, and they met
on this movie.
And he is like in the movie too. He wasn't just the choreographer, but he plays like the prince, basically. Yes. He's the guy that drops her.
He's
the guy who Mila Kunis is like feeling up.
I know. Iconic.
Hilarious.
So funny. I feel like that was such a big story too coming out of this movie was Natalie and him.
It's so cute. Can you imagine?
So,
like,
I love it.
It's like
I love
it. It's like the perfect sort of, and he did the choreography for Vox Lux. Okay.
So cool.
A power couple.
Love them.
I just love them. And they've been married ever since.
I know.
I love it. I'm so happy they found love. Because I mean, that's like, it's sort of like a non-traditional meeting on set story.
Yeah. I like,
it's like if you were an actress and like you started dating like
the stunt
coordinator gaffer or something.
Yeah. No, it's great.
What were you gonna say? You love
the whole sequence when Tomas puts up like who's gonna get the role,
right?
And Nina is like, oh, congratulations, you are gonna get it
to Veronica.
Yeah. And then Veronica comes back and be like, what the fuck was that, you bitch?
Yeah.
And it's just like so mad. But then Nina calls her mom and it's just like, he
mommy,
picked me,
I got
mommy.
It.
And it's so like,
it's unsettling.
Everything with he picked me, mommy. And like everything that, like every way she speaks to her mom is so scary and makes me cringe so hard in the best of ways.
Yeah.
But it's like, oh my God.
It's like the masturbation scene that we mentioned, which is like definitely the scariest
it's
scene
like, oh
in the
my
movie.
God.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, obviously she's undergoing a lot of emotional abuse,
trauma,
which is like par for the course in this kind of like very intense situations. I always think the scene when Tomas is like, honestly, would you fuck this girl is hilarious.
Oh my God.
He's talking to
Natalie Portman's
husband.
Yes.
Which is hilarious.
And everyone's just like, mm-hmm.
He doesn't have to actually say it though, which is nice. Otherwise that would be captured
awful,
on celluloid forever. Like, no, I don't want to fuck her.
Awful.
Oops. Yeah, obviously it's super fucked up.
Winona? I was gonna say Winona like tries to kill herself or gets hit by a car.
She definitely tries to kill herself.
Yes, yes. Ends up in the hospital. Natalie visits her, steals all of her stuff.
Steals some earrings, steals a lipstick. Is like, I just wanted to be like you.
I wanted to be perfect.
Don't worry, she gets there. And then enter
now we're here.
Lily, sexy queen,
cool tattoo,
who on the first outing with this girl who clearly has some issues is like, we should take ecstasy.
she's like, oh, you've never rolled before? No, does
girl,
she's never
no,
rolled
does
before.
Does this girl look like she's
this girl
ever
hasn't
done
had a
drug?
Glass of wine before. This girl like has her champagne at the party and like throws it out in like the bush.
Yeah, straight up ecstasy. Like, oh my
god. So funny. You see her like maybe spike her drink.
Right.
Did she actually just poison her drink, or is this like the ecstasy? Like, what's going on
here? And if she like spikes her drink, then like, what does that say for the two of them ostensibly right. going home together? And also the idea is that like, I guess she like took the taxi by herself, that she like got into her room by herself. I don't know. Anyway, they have this awesome like night out with Sebastian Stan.
What night out with Sebastian Stan isn't awesome?
I know, really. And they, we have to talk about the club scene.
Yes. No, we're there.
The club
Let's talk about it.
Is fucking sick. I wrote about this a lot in my paper too, because Brooke does book reports on
I
Mike.
Love this.
Because like there's so many, if you pause the club scene, which is like this crazy, like neon lit, like super fast, like you're essentially like frame by frame by frame, like cutting every frame a cut. More like, and but if you pause it and you like look in the back, there's so much interesting stuff happening.
Like what?
There is the Rothbart, who's like the villain from Swan Lake, like hanging out dancing with her. There's Natalie Portman dancing and making out with herself slash maybe Mila Kunis. You can't really tell. There's like Natalie Portman refracted like a million times. There's her in her Black Swan makeup, which we haven't seen yet. There is the wallpaper from her childhood bedroom, which is like pink butterflies, while she and Mila Kunis are like grinding together. And there's a bunch of like evil doubles in the background.
I need to go back.
It's
and
so
do
awesome.
This. I am going to go through literally and do my frame by frame because now I want to know.
I think if you go on YouTube and search like Black Swan club scene, there's like
a breakdown.
Everything you missed in the Black Swan club scene.
Thank you, YouTube.
Yeah, it's like, it's so deep.
That's awesome.
It's crazy.
That's really cool.
And then it cuts to her randomly making out with some dude in the bathroom.
Right, and then she storms out.
Yeah.
Goes
but
outside.
Mila Kunis follows her.
And they go into a taxi.
Yeah.
And then what?
They
she
start.
Finger walks over.
Yep. And then kind of, you know, starts.
Tries to get up in there.
Yeah.
And Natalie and then, says no. But then.
But then. When they get home,
she says yes.
Mila Kunis eats Natalie Portman out, and I think that it saved cinema.
Yeah,
if we're gonna be honest,
let's go lesbians.
Let's go lesbians. Like honestly, yes, obviously this was a very formative scene for me, but like I mentioned earlier, I think it's good because it's like it's not too overtly like, you know, salacious or anything
totally
like that.
Totally not. No, it's
pretty
like,
subtle.
It's not male gazy.
Not really.
In a way that like could have been bad. You know
there's
what I mean?
There's the scene when Natalie Portman is masturbating. There's like a lot of like her ass.
I agree. But this one,
but
I was
this
like,
one,
it's like surprisingly tasteful.
It's mostly just like on the two of them kissing.
And I mean like cool to see sex on screen as
yes.
we've talked about. Like it's important to the plot.
I actually
like
this
fuck
was
off people who are like no sex scenes, like such a fucking dumb take.
Yeah, sex scenes are great. I think there should be more sex scenes.
Every
like,
movie a sex scene.
Safely done sex scenes with intimacy yes. coordinators. But yes. like I think that this was actually kind of radical for the time because it is a lesbian sex scene. Like it's not like she's fully eating her out.
Yeah, yeah.
it's sex, you know what I mean?
Yes.
So I think it was actually like pretty radical.
I don't know about radical because there's definitely been things before that, but I think for
well, you remember all of this fucking
hullabaloo
shit with Blue Valentine, right? Where like it was
with Ryan Gosling,
yeah, where they were like
gonna
cut out like the eating out scene,
right?
And they were like no, and they had to like I don't know, there's something with it was gonna be like NC-17
yeah,
unless
yeah.
they cut it all
yeah.
this bullshit.
No, for sure.
So
I
it's
mean,
like
it's definitely
yeah.
Being able to like keep the whole scene in the way they do it I think is awesome.
Female sexuality is often demonized,
shocking, and it's
a
little
say.
Could be a little demonized in this technically, but not necessarily, you know.
Yeah,
like if you view Lily as a demon, like not a demon but like a bringer
a
of evil,
deviant,
right?
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Yeah.
I love when her mother yells as they're like running down the hall, like this is not my Nina, or that you're not my Nina anymore, or whatever it is.
She's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So good.
Cause basically then it starts like unraveling really quickly because Nina shows up late for rehearsal and finds out that
mom
Lily,
didn't wake her up.
Yeah. And finds out that Lily is her alternate. Which is like just tying in more to the themes here. It's such a mess. And then like what's like the catalyst for like her breakdown when she turns into like her legs like crack backwards like the swan legs? what happens? Am I missing like
goes
a moment?
Home,
oh,
tries
I know what
to
it is.
Kill Nina. It's like really when she tries to kill the double, right?
Well, no, I know. I remember what it is. Is that she, Nina, is like practicing late, sees all this crazy stuff, and then goes on stage and sees what we should assume to be in the real world as Lily and Tomas having sex, which is assumedly how she got the alternate role. But to Nina, it's her and Rothbart. Ooh, fancy. And that's when she goes home.
What's iconic too is in one shot, you pan down, see Lily turn into Natalie.
Right.
And then you pan back up and it was Vincent Cassell and now it's Rothbart.
Yeah.
And he looks at you and I scream. Yeah. Is what I do. It's scary. I yell because he looks like an evil bird.
It's really scary.
It's very upsetting.
There's a couple like very brief moments of comedy in this movie, but my absolute favorite one is after Nina dances her first like White Swan performance, which like is fine.
I know what you're about to say. Yes.
And like Rothbart walks up behind her and the music is building and then she turns and he's just like, hey
what's going on?
Because he's just a dancer.
It's so funny. No, I write it down every time. It kills me. What's up? How you doing? And you're like, oh my God, do you understand that she is on like the precipice of an insane breakdown?
She can't. And it's a great moment for Natalie Portman too, because she kind of just like shakes her head and she's like, right, like I need to get my shit together right
now.
She
storms down and it becomes worse.
Yeah, it's so bad. Anyway, she rolls up the night of the performance super late and Lily's supposed to dance for her and is like really pissed about it. And Nina's like, I'm here.
I got it. Well, because this is after she slams her mother's fingers in the door.
Yeah.
Her mom called and was like, she's sick. She can't make it tonight.
She deserves, honestly.
Slams her hands and you hear like the crunch.
Yeah.
It's brutal.
But then she shows up in the audience. I like that.
Is she there though?
I think that she is there because like she's the only face that you clearly see in the audience. Mm. And I kind of love the idea that like in her moment of like, at her that it is her highest point and her lowest point simultaneously, but like at that moment she does like see her mother and she's like, right, this was all meant
a
to
part
be
of
for
you
something.
No, I get that.
Oh, cinema.
And then I remember there's something that happens with Lily in their dressing room. Lily comes down to be like, wow, you're really great up there, love you. And then what happens?
So it's basically after Nina like falls on stage during her White Swan performance. And the idea is that Lily is there being like, I'm going to dance the Black Swan for you. But then she turns into Natalie Portman.
And she goes, it's my turn.
Yep. And then they fight and Natalie Portman's neck turns into a bird's.
And she stabs her with a broken piece of glass.
And her feet turn into webbing briefly. It's all
terrifying.
Very upsetting.
When she's trying to pull her toes apart earlier.
Body horror. Ugh. All the body horror in this is so terrible. Good. I had to look away this time with like the nail.
Yeah.
See the cuticle when she like pulls off her nail. Because I like have seen it so many times and I was gross. Like you know what, not this time, this will upset me
I don't need it, I'm fine
poor Lily, but also not really,
because not really
after Nina dances her transcendent coda and turns into a swan on stage.
Lily's like, great, I love you, you're
Lily's
amazing.
Lily's like, surprise, I'm not dead.
Alive,
I'm super alive.
And Natalie's then, oh shit, I'm bleeding from my stomach.
She stabbed herself because the only person standing in your way is you.
You.
Do you know what I mean?
Hell yeah. Capitalizing on the themes. She goes out there, gives the fucking dance. Everyone's cheering. You have the most iconic falling with her shot as she falls to her death, hits the mat. Everyone applauds. Cassell runs out.
Yeah. And she delivers my favorite line in cinematic history, which is perfect. It was perfect.
Yes.
And the thing is,
It was
perfect, but also there's literally no other way for this movie to end. Like,
no.
It has to end with her killing herself because Swan Lake ends with the White Swan dying. And, like, you can't achieve perfection any other way.
Yeah, other than killing yourself.
Deeply upsetting.
Yes. Not recommended for home.
Don't try this at home.
Don't try to pursue perfection to this amount. We would say.
Yeah. No.
Not healthy.
I think this is the only movie where I get chills every single time I watch it.
Yeah.
Like, I always get chills at the coda business with, like, the rash up and down her arms. And I always get chills at the final line, no matter what.
Oh.
No matter what.
The final line's amazing.
Which is crazy.
I felt it.
Yeah. I felt it.
Perfect.
So good.
It was perfect.
And I love that we like cut to the lights and everything. We fade out from her POV on the lights.
And there's applause. All you hear when mm-hmm. she dies is applause.
Mm-hmm. Great. So good.
I'm like having a moment
Brooke's
right now.
Crying on Maine.
I'm having a moment. This movie fucking
ballet movies are so good.
Rules.
The Red Shoes, this, both like, obviously
Red Sparrow.
Like,
just kidding.
Wow.
Really just cut you off at the knees there, didn't I?
The Red Shoes obviously has very similar themes to this about the pursuit of perfection and the art that you love.
Right.
And so it's a very fun companion piece for those at home. If you want some nice ballet movies, both of them dealing with also really scary makeup.
Oh, totally.
The makeup in The Red Shoes makes me have nightmares.
Yeah. Oh my God. That movie's amazing. I also think that like a Perfect Blue Black Swan double feature will probably make you feel terrible because
about
both
yourself,
of those
yeah.
movies are deeply upsetting. Like Perfect Blue upset me so much.
Yeah. It's not a happy movie
at all, but it does have kind of a happy ending, which is nice.
Ish.
She did
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
She gets it's a good movie. I'm not going to spoil
no
anything.
No spoilers.
But
from the movie 1997.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good. It's an anime. So
it is. We love.
Okay.
What
this
other,
movie.
Any other scenes that stick out for you or
oh,
I think
no.
we kind of went through it.
We covered it all. There is one hilarious line when they meet Sebastian Stan and that other guy at the club. And Lily calls she and Nina blood sisters and then says Tom and Jerry here are gay lovers, which I think is hilarious. Did you write
that
down? That
too.
And
yeah.
then Sebastian Stan's like, I've never been to the ballet. And Mila Kunis is like, well, then you are definitely not gay.
Right. She was like, I can get you a ticket. And he's like,
I don't want a fucking ticket.
He's like, I'm here just to try to hook up
I'm
with you.
Trying to
you
fuck.
Crazy woman.
I think that that's
is this a girl boss movie.
It definitely is. I think that that was
Joke
the
her.
First. I think that this sex scene was the first like girl on girl
you'd ever seen
sex scene that I'd ever seen.
Oh my goodness! Yeah. Wow.
So I realized Welcome. That when I was watching it, I was like, I think it, probably.
That's crazy.
Like, period. Like, full
Damn.
Stop. Yeah. Not.
I
like,
mean, it makes sense given the age and everything. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, because it's like you're going to probably experience it through a movie first to then be like, oh, what's this?
Or porn.
Well, I mean.
That's all I'm saying.
True. But, I mean, like, to see, you know, yeah. it will kickstart something.
Yeah.
At an
oh,
age.
Yeah.
yeah.
So thank you, Black Swan. Thank
wow.
you.
Darren Aronofsky, integral to this podcast.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where would we be without him?
I don't even want to think about it. Did you have anything else that you want to mention? I think we basically...
No, those are my big... My thing was also the Tom and Jerry note, so...
Oh,
you
wow.
did it.
Look at that.
Love it.
Let's talk about the release.
Yes.
Okay,
How
so,
did it do?
This movie has such a weird release strategy because it did platform up.
Yeah.
Like, and at its widest, it was at 2,400 screens, and then it, like... platformed back down, but like it was
2,400 screens
yeah at its widest, which is great, but that's, it opened in like 18 theaters.
Yeah.
It was never number one. It peaked at number five. It was like this weird thing where it played for like 6 months and it just kind of like kept quietly collecting money, but it never
that kind
like,
of rules though
hit number one or anything. Yeah,
I mean, it makes sense for the kind of movie it is. It's like R, obviously. It's more of an indie.
Mm-hmm.
It's a specific type of horror movie. It's not like, you know what I mean? I mean, like, I wonder if released now how it would do, but I feel like, especially for the time, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And for, like, the Oscar run that it's going to try to have and everything.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it definitely, like, worked for it, obviously.
How much does it end up making?
Domestically, it made $106 million, almost $107 million. Like, that is so much money. And worldwide, $331 million. Like, on a budget of $13 million, can you imagine? Jordan's a little dumbstruck.
My
right now.
Eyes are like shook because, like, think about the residuals that
right.
they're making or made.
Like this movie paid out like a fucking
profit,
slot machine.
Only profit for everyone involved.
$13 million budget.
Even Winona, who is in like three scenes, is probably like. Bless God. Thank you, Darren Aronofsky, for Black Swan.
I know. I hope they had good back end deals.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. This is, again, proof that indie cinema, you know?
That's so cool.
Like, this movie made so much
money. Good for Natalie.
Money.
did she get a producing credit on it or no?
Mm-mm. I don't think so. I actually am positive that she didn't. She does produce a lot of her stuff now, but
yeah.
this was like, this really like gave her a huge boost, I think, in terms of like what she was doing. It gave her a lot of power. Because it is, you know, just one of the most transcendent performances. I do think she was, like, involved creatively, obviously, with, like, all the training and everything.
Of course,
and,
yeah.
like, you know, this movie, it's all her. Like, she's in every single scene. I don't think there's any scenes without her, actually.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's like, every single scene.
Cool.
It's the Natalie show.
I love it.
As it should be.
I was just reading quickly here. There's a lot of people who were comparing this to Showgirls by Verhoeven. And I'm like, kind of true.
It's a Brooke Solomon double feature right there.
Unhinged, derided, like sort of sexual exploitation movies.
Yeah. I mean, I love it. This movie makes you feel bad about being aroused by it.
This movie challenges you and says sex is scary.
Sex is unfortunate, but also like deeply arousing, like, everyone needs at the same to do time. It.
It's like what is sex?
Yeah. I mean, it's like after that Thomas Nina scene, it just cuts to her crying in front of a mirror and you're like, oh fuck, guy. Oh,
Jesus God.
I shouldn't have found that hot, I guess.
No.
Yeah, it's a good movie. I love it.
It goes on to get nommed for Best Picture.
Best Picture, Best Actress, obviously, with a career-defining win for Miss Natalie Portman.
The queen.
Darren Aronofsky snagged that Best Director nom. I think it was nominated for cinematography, and I believe for editing as well.
Yep.
Honestly, should have been nominated for more. I think it is very rude that Vincent Cassel didn't sneak in, although I think this was a pretty stacked year.
So, a hugely stacked year. Hugely I mean, stacked. There's no way he sort of sneaks into Best Supporting.
Best Supporting Actor category is like very
Bale stacked. For The Fighter, John Hawks for Winter's Bone, Jeremy Renner for The Town, Mark Ruffalo, The Kids Are All Right, Jeffrey Rush for The King's Speech.
Yeah.
So you probably lose Rush.
You want Cassell in there. And it's like, you also want like Andrew Garfield for Social Network in there. Like it was a stacked year. What can I say?
Best Supporting Actress too. I mean, like, you could have seen Mila getting a nom in there. Even Winona, like, for like, whatever, however little it is, it's a good performance. You know what I mean? Like, you kind of want her to sneak in or something. But
I don't think it would have ever.
I don't think it would either.
But I think it is like a little disrespectful that Vincent Cassel didn't get a nom. But whatever, that's not for me to say. And I also, in a perfect world, this totally should have snuck into Best Adapted Screenplay.
For sure.
But again, like I said, it's not a flashy screenplay.
And it can't get the score or anything, obviously, because it's using pre-existing music. Yeah.
Was it nominated for costume?
It was.
Or visual effects.
Not for art direction. Not for costume design. Not for makeup, which is kind of shocking.
Really? And not for visual effects.
No, definitely not.
Wow. No. Well, that's, again, extremely rude. But I have a good little piece of trivia regarding the Oscars on this movie. And that is that it is one of only 6 horror films to ever be nominated for Best Picture.
That rules.
Would you like to know the other 5?
What are they?
They are The Exorcist, Jaws, Silence of the Lambs, The Sixth Sense, and Get Out. And Black Swan, of course.
I feel like I could have got most of this. The Sixth Sense one would have thrown me off.
Yeah.
That's a toughie.
Because it is
a shocked
is a
that
film.
Got a Best Picture nom.
Yeah. And I mean,
great movie.
A lot of iconic noms.
Do you see dead people?
I do.
We do. We see him.
Every day.
Bruce Willis. He's a dead person. Spoiler alert for this old movie.
I've actually still never seen it.
Really?
Yeah, I know. But I know.
I'm sorry
like,
for spoiling the twist.
Jordan. Don't even
the Lonely Island spoil a twist in the movie or in a song, so it's fine.
I've always known.
Yeah it's like probably one, like, there are some spoilers that I think still are like fun twists for people, but that's one that I think no one
everybody knows
know.
Right. But I feel like if I watched the movie I would still be like surprised by
you're still like oh cool.
I love a good proper twisty movie.
It's good.
Yeah
M. Night at his best.
At his best, of course.
And now we'll get old.
No. Ugh.
What's the Letterboxd?
Yeah. You want to guess it?
I would love to guess it.
All right. Give me a guess.
I'm going to go with a 3.9.
It's a 4.1.
A 4.1?
A 4.1. Also, you know what's interesting? I could have sworn when I checked this yesterday that it was a 4.
Whoa.
So maybe my 5-star review was
iconic.
The one that knocked it to a 4.1.
No, brought it. Yeah.
Yeah. Or brought it up. Yeah.
It's a 4.1?
It's a 4.1.
Whoa.
Letterboxd fucking loves this
That's
movie.
Awesome. That's very cool.
Over 677,000
A lot of people have seen this movie. Very popular.
Yeah.
One of our most popular, if you like go... to our reviews or whatever and you click a tag, it'll show you like rank the popular movies that we've covered on this podcast. One of the most popular, if not right now, the most that
good,
we've done.
Good for us.
Shocking.
Yeah. I mean, look, Letterboxd is obsessed with this movie, as they should be. It's a good
it
piece
plays
of
into
cinema.
The themes of the movie.
It does.
They're obsessed. We're obsessed.
We're everyone's obsessed.
I love it. I love it.
Okay. Where do we think it's landing on the QQ?
This Would is, you like to lead off?
Yeah. You know, because it's like, I think that there is, unfortunately, and maybe I'm just being hard on the movie because I know it so well, but I think that there is like a straight reading, which is insane when you consider the fact that there's like an explicit lesbian sex scene, or I should say queer female sex scene in this movie. But just like given everything, I don't know. I'm thinking.
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, since this is a non-traditional episode.
I'm going to say... Actually, now I'm nervous.
Well, because that's the thing.
Because I didn't have the straight read. I didn't know about the straight read before, so I hadn't like considered it.
So you're just going to go like 5.
I was thinking a 5, but
I think I
guess
go...
if there's a straight read, I'll give it like a 4.5.
I'll give it a 4.5 too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a 4.5.
Maybe because... I'll give it a 4.5 because I'm like, look... It is most likely in her head. And yeah. Like, it's a lot about like all about we're in Nina. Then again, at the same time, it is like her needing to awaken a queer sexuality within herself to right. be able to do the Black Swan and to be perfect. So I think if you can't see that through line, then you're kind of missing the point. And also, you know, she does make out with Mila Kunis and there's
does,
an entire sex
yeah.
scene. So honestly,
4.5,
you know,
I think is good.
4.75.
No, we're not going back to this.
4.99.
Okay, I'm gonna say 4.5.
4.5 for you. Okay.
4.5.
All right.
Okay.
I'm okay. I think that's a comfortable place for it to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm happy with that.
Okay. Me too. Now, before we do our usual wrap up, we just want to take a couple minutes.
A few.
And say thank you again to all of our listeners for listening to us for a whole year.
Truly.
And if any previous guests are listening, we just want to thank you for coming on.
Always welcome back.
And if any future guests are listening, we look forward to seeing
you. Slide into those DMs.
In the future. And if Super Yaki is listening,
we love you.
We love you so much. And we love the whole team. And we can't wait to see what you have in the future. And thank you for believing in us when we,
when we
had like
barely
4
believed
episodes.
In ourselves.
And... yeah.
No, I mean, I just think not to be earnest and genuine on main and, you know, wipe away the facade that I have, but I do.
What facade?
It has been a pleasure doing this. It's something I always look forward to. Always fun to edit, even though, you know, going back and stuff. But it has really been, I think, a delightful time. And it's so fun to do this and sort of reappraise these movies that you either forgot or things like that. It's definitely like allowed me to either see something new or visit something that I had long forgot, like 300 and stuff like that, you know? So
yeah. No.
And I mean, for you, it's huge because you've now seen more than 5 movies.
I knew there was something coming. I should have guessed.
Sorry.
No, to be real and sincere, yeah, on main, yeah. This is super, super fun and like has become a very large part of my life, and I love doing it with you and seeing you, and love planning as much as you love editing.
Love it.
And love all the little sort of cool things that we've done over the past
people
year.
Really, if you pulled back the curtain, people would not know how much planning and dumb shit we do behind the
yeah,
scenes.
Oh, so much. For example, like chatting Channing was so much fun.
Just you wait. We have so much.
Well, that's what I was leading up to.
Sorry.
Our Christmas
sorry.
Candy battle was a lot of fun, and we have a lot more exciting stuff planned for the future along those lines and along fresh new lines. And of course, we hope to expand all the wonderful people that we've had on our podcast. And yeah,
I'm
you
very
know,
excited
there's a lot
the
of
future.
Really cool people that we'd like to work with.
Absolutely.
That we hope to.
Oh, we will.
very
we will.
Soon. And just, you know, to lead us off, since we've been doing this podcast for a year, I just wanted to drop some quick statistics because who doesn't
who
love
are we but stats?
Statistics? And I just wanted to say, I just wanted to give us sort of like the 1 year retrospective of the films that have done the best for us on the QQ, our QQ
or the worst.
Hall of Fame. So there have been 3 movies
so far across the board, and all three involved guests, which is fun.
Love to see that.
That have been a perfect 5-5-5.
And they are.
On the QQ. The movies are The Talented Mr. Ripley.
A fact.
Rocket Man.
Hell yeah.
And Bad Education.
You love to see it.
So good.
All good movies.
A great triptych of five. I gave Kiss Kiss Bang Bang 5 stars, but Jordan did not. Mulan 5 stars, but I did not.
I would
not.
Probably go back and lower that a little bit, I want to say.
I don't think you have to.
I don't know, but I think it is interesting. We've discussed this off, but I guess like looking at some of our earlier episodes versus some of our laters and sort of how we've evolved, I guess, over time, specifically with our first episode that we did with Jennifer's Body.
I'm really glad that you brought this up because a couple of other films have come very close to getting the 5-5-5 treatment. For example, I Care a Lot, Black Swan, today's episode, and Dog Day Afternoon. But it was truly deranged of us to not give Jennifer's Body 5 stars across the board.
Would you like to make it official right now?
Yes.
For us to both give Jennifer's Body 5 stars.
5 stars on the Queer Quadrant.
There it is.
I think we
update the charts.
Yeah, I think we were afraid to come out of the gate like too strong, but like literally insane of us.
A 5 across the board.
It
has
to be a 5 on the QQ.
Yes.
So now there are.
Congratulations, Jennifer's Body.
Congratulations, Jennifer's Body. You have joined the QQ Hall of Fame.
Ranks. I love it. That's so funny. Yeah. No, I'm glad that we were both adjusting on that.
Yes.
I will say, is there any notable one for you where you think back and you're like, wow. Other than Home Alone, I can't believe we made it through.
Well, Home Alone is obviously
maybe the
immediate
lowest point.
Referential one, but we ragged on Troy pretty hard.
We did. Honestly, I think Troy has a lower overall score than
Home Alone
does,
for some
which
deranged
is wild.
Reason.
Well,
I mean, Home Alone 1.5 stars, which is far too high. It's too high. I don't know what I was thinking. I was
keep
in the
it.
Christmas
keep
spirit.
It.
Yeah. So what were you going
to
say?
No, I was going to say, I mean, I think it's iconic of us to be like, yeah, Troy 1/2 star, Home Alone. Okay, 1.5.
Star
one.
And a half.
Yeah.
We were also very hard on Bohemian Rhapsody as it deserved.
As it should be.
And
yes.
We were also pretty damn hard on the modern day Mulan.
Yes, we were.
Yeah, which I don't.
Well,
I think that it deserved it for some reasons.
For, you know, behind the scenes reasons.
Right.
Yeah.
But so those are some of the worst of the worst. But we also have the best of the best.
Exactly. I think it's a good spread across the board.
I would agree. And there are a lot of episodes that land right in the middle that are really good episodes, regardless of their QQ rating.
Exactly.
So basically,
just if you have a high QQ doesn't mean you're not a good app.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, if you're wondering which episodes to listen to
all
based on this, the answer is all of them.
Yes.
Yes.
Wow. Good for Jennifer's Body. I'm happy that we're coming out of this
we
with a fresh 5.
To right or wrong. Okay. Karin Kusama deserves it.
She does.
She really does.
Come on the pod. We'll discuss.
Karin, we love you. Megan Fox, we love you. Amanda Seyfried, love you too, girl. So there we go.
I love
Full
it.
Circle from
so
when
much
we
to
started.
Look forward to.
Speaking of looking forward to
something.
Next week, do you want to tell the listeners what we're covering?
Get ready to splish, splash, and stomp on a golf course, baby, because we are doing High School Musical 2.
Hell yeah.
That's right. You thought that we couldn't go any higher. We're going even higher, baby.
What
Fat
better
fives
way
across the board. I'm calling it now.
To kick off year 2 of the pod, then High School Musical 2. It's thematic.
Bet on
the
it. Bet on it. Bet on it.
And it's the second
exactly.
year. You know what I mean? Yeah.
You can bet on us having a good time.
Yes, absolutely. So that's next week.
Very excited for it.
Hey Jordan.
Hey Brooke.
People want to find us. Where
yes.
should they find us?
You can find us on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember to rate, review, subscribe, or follow. 5 stars only. 5 perfect pirouettes only. 5 perfect performances only. Otherwise, we're going to have to turn into evil doppelgangers of ourselves and maybe stab us in the stomach. I don't know. You can find me on Twitter at Jordan H. Gus.
At Brooke B. Solomon.
And together at Queer Quadrant.
Okay, it was a little messy, but
that
you got there.
It was messy
you
and stressful, but I did it.
We'll
it was not a perfect performance.
We'll be back to normal next week.
Yes. And Brooke, is there anything you would like to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just remember that we felt it on this episode. Mm. Perfect. It was perfect.